Through some 50 years, the World Wrestling Federation has been an entertainment mainstay here in North America and all over the world. One of the reasons for that longevity is as the times have changed, so have we. We in the WWF think that you, the audience, are quite frankly tired of having your intelligence insulted.
Solid Monster sounds off.
My client, Brock Lesnar, conquered the street.
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
He's fat. You haven't been beat up properly. Woo!
Welcome to episode 344 of the Solid Monster Sounds Off here for Sunday, September 7th, 2014. I am the Solid Monster. And a big thank you to everybody listening to the podcast this weekend, whether you're listening to it through the SolidMonster.com, iTunes, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, Mars, Jupiter, Saturn, wherever you may be. Big thank you for taking the time out of your day to listen to what is going to be a humongous show this week. There's just so much stuff to cover, it's not even funny. And so we're going to get into all that in just a second. First, some PayPal shout-outs for people who have made a PayPal donation to the podcast. You can do so on thesolidmonster.com. $10 or more will get you a wrestling nickname. These people are true blue supporters of the podcast. Adam the Maniac Misaglia, Craig Pitbull Brown, Travon Cannonball Clark, Hytham the Equalizer Al Nawasser, Ravishing Rob Mace, Ladies Man Levi Daly, Wildcat Christopher Harris, Freebird Matt Freeman, Jacob, Go to Hell, Odell, Sweet and Sour, Samuel Joubert, Haymaker, Jesus Leva, and the Slayer, Seth Brooks. Thank you for the donations. Again, you could do so on thesolidmonster.com. And I have a big announcement to make here. If you follow me on Twitter, Facebook, you already know this, but I just am very proud to announce that we now have a brand new Sound Off shop on ProWrestlingTees.com. ProWrestlingTees.com has a whole bunch of stores, mostly for wrestlers. So a lot of independent wrestlers have stores on there selling t-shirts and assorted merchandise. Legends, Mick Foley, Vader, Jake Roberts, Scott Hall, they all have stores on that website. And now so does the Sound Off. You can go to the official podcast page on there for the Solid Monster Sounds Off. ProWrestlingTees.com/SolidMonsterSoundsOff. Bookmark that. That's going to be our official URL if you want to just go directly to the store. There's four t-shirt designs up there right now, including the official Sound Off logo shirt, three other designs. We'll be able to add more in the future, provided that we can move a certain number of shirts up front. So the more shirts that we sell, the more designs we'll be able to add in the future. I've got a lot of ideas floating around my head. I've had a couple of people offer to mock up designs. So a lot of fun stuff, exciting stuff, hopefully that you guys will like. But we can only do that with your support. We need you to go and support the podcast. And so if you do so, let me know, because the first 25 people who buy a shirt, you'll get a shout-out here on the Sound Off, and you can go to ProWrestlingTees.com/SolidMonsterSoundsOff to find the shirt that you like. They ship internationally all over the world, so no matter where you are, that should not be an issue, although they do only accept PayPal as payment right now. Not a whole lot I can do about that, but just be aware of that when you go and visit the store. But find a shirt that you like, wear it proudly, ProWrestlingTees.com/SolidMonsterSoundsOff. Very proud to be part of that new family. And I also want to mention one other thing here before we move on, and that is that last Monday I posted a Sound Off inbox on YouTube, our YouTube channel. If you go to YouTube.com/TheSolidMonster, that's our channel, you can subscribe from there. Is Randy Orton an all-time great? Is one of the questions that was sent in to me and that we tackle. We also pitch an idea on how to make Sami Zayn a star in one night when he eventually gets called up to Raw. Talk a little bit about this heat between Hornswoggle and The Rock. Yes, Hornswoggle and The Rock apparently had a beef, believe it or not. And I also saw Hornswoggle's movie, the Leprechaun movie, Leprechaun Origins, and I give a quick, succinct, to-the-point review of that movie. So if you're interested in that, Sound Off Inbox, it's up on our YouTube channel right now, another 75-minute bonus sound-off for those of you who are interested. Hopefully I'll have more of those up in the future. Ring of Honor had an iPay-per-view last night, the All-Star Extravaganza show, which had a pretty good lineup. I did not see the show, but I did know the card. It did look pretty good. I know that Silas Young broke his leg earlier in the week. It's really shitty. I like Silas Young, but he broke his leg. I don't know how, I don't know where or when or how it happened, but apparently he's going to be out for up to 4 months. He was supposed to face Cedric Alexander on the show, so they had a scramble. They announced that Mike Bennett would replace Young against Cedric Alexander. As it turned out, there was something else that happened, which is that ACH missed his flight. ACH was supposed to wrestle Jay Lethal, I believe, for the television title. ACH, by the way, if you've never seen him, spectacular performer, a lot of fun to watch. I saw him in action at the ROH show here in Brooklyn only a few weeks ago. So he missed his flight. I don't know what the hell happened, but apparently Ring of Honor not very happy with him. I don't know what his future is like now in the company. So they had to scramble, and they had to move things around a little bit, so it ended up being Jay Lethal defending the television title against Cedric Alexander, who did not win. Jay Lethal is still the television champion. I think Mike Bennett was on the show, but he didn't wrestle. They had a scramble because of what happened, and they're not happy with ACH. But the bigger story is that there is a new Ring of Honor World Heavyweight Champion. His name is Jay Briscoe. Jay Briscoe, who has not been defeated in a singles match in Ring of Honor in something like 2 years, only became the second man in history to hold the ROH title twice, the first person being Austin Aries. And Michael Elgin, at less than 3 months as the ROH champion, is no longer the Ring of Honor champion. So that was kind of shocking. I don't think a lot of people really expected that. You got Final Battle coming up. Maybe you would expect a title change there, but they did it last night at the iPay-per-view. And the story behind it, per The Observer, and it's not good news, I guess, if you're a Michael Elgin fan, is that Elgin did an interview, and I actually read the transcript of the interview a couple days ago that he did with Brian Fritz. And in the interview, I don't even know how it came up. I didn't hear the audio of it. Again, I read a transcript, so I don't know if he dwelled on it for a while. It seemed like a very quick, almost in-passing comment. He was asked, I guess, about future goals, and Elgin said that what he was hoping to do was actually try out for a Major League Baseball team next year. Which comes out of nowhere. I think isn't Elgin Canadian? I didn't really think MLB was as big up in Canada. But anyway, apparently that's a goal of his, to try out for a Major League Baseball team. And he said that. And I guess then they moved on in the interview. And this infuriated Ring of Honor executives. I don't know if it was specifically Sinclair or ROH, although I guess it's all one and the same, so it doesn't really matter. But the higher-ups were just incensed when they heard those comments. I mean, this is their champion talking about how next year he wants to try out for a Major League Baseball team and maybe pursue that as like a new dream. And the guy is the champion. He's, you know, the face of your company. I can understand them being upset. I don't know that I would have expected them to take the title off him because of it, but apparently that's exactly what happened. Elgin was not supposed to lose the championship. He might have dropped it at Final Battle, but that was still months down the road. And the decision was only made about a day or two before the show. They heard the comments. They said, hey, the hell with this guy. If that's what he wants to do, let him do it. And they decided to put the title on Jay Briscoe. So, you know, the thing with Michael Elgin is a great worker. When I first saw Elgin, the thing that impressed me about him, it's his strength. You know, he's a big guy. He's not tall, but he's a big guy. He doesn't really come off as that strong, but he's a monster. And I saw him doing those delayed vertical suplexes from the inside middle rope. You know, the guy's out on the apron, he suplexes him up. I first saw him doing that before I ever saw Cesaro doing it on WWE TV. So the guy is just a beast. You know, he's got all this power. He's a great wrestler. But the problem with Elgin, in my view, he's way too bland. There's nothing about the guy that jumps out at you as being exciting. His promos, none of it. I mean, Jay Briscoe is an awesome promo. Both Briscoes are. Mark is a maniac. But, you know, Jay Briscoe, very entertaining on promos. As a wrestler, you know, he's fine. I wouldn't call him as good of a wrestler as Michael Elgin, but it's not like Jay Briscoe is a bad wrestler. He's more of a brawling type. He's an interesting character. Michael Elgin is not an interesting character. Michael Elgin is very dull and very boring in a lot of ways until you watch his matches. And I think that's how he got himself over. He got himself over by busting his ass and having great matches. But sometimes it takes a little bit more than just that, and I can't say that I'm upset that he's no longer the champion. I think Jay Briscoe probably is the better choice. If it was a last-minute decision, you know, I hate to compare the two because I know, look, I'm not saying they're on the same level, but it almost kind of reminds me of The Undertaker and his streak in that here Jay Briscoe is, undefeated in singles matches for 2 years, and I'm positive that wasn't something they planned. It probably just happened over time, and they realized it, and they started mentioning it, kind of like the streak. You know, The Undertaker was never intended to go undefeated at every WrestleMania, but somewhere along the way, somebody said, hey, this guy hasn't lost a match yet, he's unbeaten. We should probably mention that. We should probably spit that out on television, on, you know, on commentary, and let people know. And, you know, if the idea here was that Briscoe would have lost and Elgin would have retained, at least now they can keep this little streak going that Briscoe has. It just adds another element to his character. Now he's got the belt back, and eventually when somebody beats him, you know, presumably it will be a bigger deal because it'll be his first loss in over 2 years. So maybe they lucked into something here. I think Briscoe will be a, you know, a better draw as champion than Elgin would be. But that's why he dropped the belt. I think Michael Elgin might have a lot of free time coming up in his future to try out for whatever sport he may choose. I think his future in Ring of Honor is probably tenuous at best. I don't know what his future holds, but not looking too good right now. Which brings us to Monday Night Raw. Speaking of not looking too good, Raw this past Monday night was live from Des Moines, Iowa. Coming off one of the worst, god-awful editions of Raw that I have seen in a long-ass time, you would think, can't get any worse than that, can only go up from here. They swung, they missed, can't hit a home run every week, they'll come back with a good show on Labor Day. Well, if you thought that, you would be wrong. And let me preface this by saying that I know some of you actually liked this show. Others thought, well, it wasn't that bad. People are shitting on this show. They're just overreacting. I can't speak for those people, so I'll speak for myself. I'm not overreacting when I say that this show sucked. It bored me to tears. It was dull. It was uninspired. And Labor Day, by the way, had absolutely nothing to do with it because it sucked the week before. So I don't want to hear this, oh, it was a holiday nonsense. That has nothing to do with it. If you don't take kindly to people's opinions that may differ from yours, skip this review. If you're easily offended by foul language or have little kids listening to the show, skip this week's Raw review. Okay? You've been warned. You heard the clip at the beginning of the podcast. I played it. It was from a speech that Vince McMahon gave on Raw back in 1997. It's labeled on YouTube as Vince McMahon Introduces the Attitude Era. And in that speech, he said, we in WWE, back then WWF, think that you, the audience, are quite frankly tired of having your intelligence insulted. And I just think that quote, that comment, is so appropriate. Because here we are all these years later, almost 20 years later. That's how long it's been since he gave that speech. And here we are having our intelligence insulted week after week after week. The big difference being, when he gave that speech in 1997, Vince McMahon was getting his ass handed to him week after week after week by the competition. Well, here we are 20 years later, and there is no competition. So they can just insult us, and they can think we're stupid, and there could be, you know, little potholes. Potholes, not even loopholes, or little logic gaps. Potholes in these storylines. Oh, we don't have to fill them, it's just wrestling, it's not a big deal, who cares? Okay, this is what they think of you and me, the audience. This is how highly regarded they consider their audience, that they just shovel this shit down our throats week after week because they know that we're going to take it. And so who cares? Matt Hardy had a whole series of tweets after the show on Monday night. And he was not the only one, by the way. He was not the only wrestler to go ahead and rant on this show. I saw Lance Storm was ranting on this show. Other people were ranting on the show. So, again, for the people who will say, well, it's just typical IWC Smarks ranting and raving and overreacting, is Matt Hardy an IWC Smark? Is Lance Storm an IWC Smark? I hate those three fucking initials so much anyway. The people who use them, half the time they don't even know what it means. What does that even mean? IWC, Internet Wrestling Community. Who isn't in the Internet Wrestling Community in 2014? I mean, really, wake the fuck up. That's number one. That's a whole other story. But back to Matt Hardy. I want to isolate Matt Hardy because he had a whole series of tweets that he posted when this show was over on Monday night that I think perfectly encapsulates exactly what the issue is and what my thoughts and feelings are as well. And I'm sure many of you feel the same way. And I want to read them to you here. He said, "I love WWE and I respect the company. WWE gave me so much, but it drives me crazy when they insult viewers by force-feeding them absurd stories. If pro wrestling wants to be taken seriously, it has to be presented as fun, yet logical to the viewer. TV's advanced so much in terms of sophisticated storytelling. Wrestling has not, and viewers see right through it. In 2014, with shows like Breaking Bad, Walking Dead, True Detective, etc., wrestling storytelling on TV has got to step up. For example, The Walking Dead is outrageous fiction, but consistent and has continuity within its parameters. Viewers lose themselves in the Walking Dead universe. Walking Dead stays in the parameters of its created universe, suspending a viewer's disbelief. Wrestling should strive to do that as well." I think Matt Hardy is right on the money with those comments. I said it on this podcast weeks ago. Go back and listen to it. I called Monday Night Raw the worst show on television. Because that's how they want to be judged, right? We're not wrestling. We're not a pro wrestling show. That's a dirty word. Even though some wrestlers still get away with calling it wrestling on TV, the company itself doesn't refer to itself as a pro wrestling show or as a pro wrestling company. It's sports entertainment. We make movies every single week. We're no different than any of the other shows you would see on TV. The minute they say that, they are going to be judged just like every other show on television. That's how people should judge them. How the hell can you judge Monday Night Raw against Breaking Bad? How can you judge Monday Night Raw against Sons of Anarchy? Or True Detective? Or any of those shows? And honestly believe that Raw is any good? That it is a good television show? A show that will start and stop storylines and it doesn't even, it's like it never happened. Look at the New Nation stuff. They made one appearance on television and were never spoken of again on Raw. I don't give a shit about Main Event. Main Event doesn't matter. House shows don't matter. And I love the people, by the way, who emailed me, and there were only a few of you, but the people emailed me saying, "Solomonster, you know, Xavier Woods and Big E and Kofi Kingston, they were doing their gimmick. They were together on the house shows last week, and I think you jumped the gun. You were wrong." Really? Where are they on Raw? Where are they on Raw? How many weeks has it been since that first tease? Where are they on Raw? Are they invisible? Are they the three invisible men? Because I don't see them. No, it's another example of a start and stop storyline because their show sucks. And they don't know how to tell good stories. It's like they forgot how to tell good stories. They'll pull one out of their ass every now and then because, you know, even a broken clock is right twice a day. Big deal. You've got how many guys on the roster? You've got 3 hours of television every week. One good story, one, you know, and usually the good story is the Main Event feud. Like the way they booked Brock Lesnar. I thought that was great. The build-up to Cena Lesnar at SummerSlam was great. Okay, what about every other character and every other storyline on the show? So I am 100% in the corner of Matt Hardy on this. I think he hit the mark with his comments. You know, week after week, they just continue to insult us because they know that we're going to keep watching. So part of it falls on us. It's my fault. It's your fault because we keep watching. I know a lot of you are no longer watching. Some of you aren't. Some of you email me and say, "Listen, I'm not even watching this show anymore. I just listen to the reviews on your podcast because I just can't take it. I can't take the commentary. I can't take JBL. I can't take the Bellas. I can't take the Bunny. I can't take any of that stuff." And what makes it even worse is you're watching this show and they're showing you commercials for the Monday Night War series on the WWE Network. And it's Attitude Week of all weeks. Of all the Raw shows to be airing this commercial, this shit show that they shoveled down our throats on Monday night, and we see a commercial for Attitude Week, and you've got people, Stephanie McMahon is being interviewed, saying it was the most fun time to be a fan, it was the most fun time to follow our product, and they're showing you the best of Stone Cold and The Rock and The Undertaker and Mankind and DX and Mr. McMahon and the New Age Outlaws and everything. All the fun stuff about the Attitude Era. And you're just sitting there as a wrestling fan, if you've been a fan for any length of time. If you're a new fan, imagine being a new fan sitting here watching this going, "Holy crap, I want to watch that. Why can't wrestling go back to that?" Which is not to say that everything about the Attitude Era was great. It wasn't. I mean, the Attitude Era gets romanticized a lot. But they're showing you the best of what their own people are saying was the most fun time to be a fan, and we have to sit here and watch this at one of the worst times to be a fan. So, look, they have to promote their series. I'm not saying they shouldn't be airing commercials. I'm just saying the timing could not be worse for them to be airing commercials for Attitude Week and the best of WWE at a time when we have to sit here through the worst of WWE. The sign of the night on Monday night easily was this guy holding up a sign that said, I could be home watching Nitro, because they were promoting Nitro is now on the network. They've added the first 100 hours of WCW Monday Nitro, which is, I think it's just all the episodes from 1995 and 1996, and I think it terminates at the end of 96. And so this guy is holding up a sign saying, I could be home watching Nitro, and truer words have never been spoken. I would have much rather been doing a lot of other things than watching this show on Monday. And by the way, that fan with the sign, there was a whole big brouhaha when the show was over that this guy was threatened with arrest, and they took the sign away from him, freedom of speech and all this. He probably did have the sign taken away from him, but he was also belligerent, according to the people around him, and acting like a dick. He was throwing his signs up in the air. He was shouting expletives all night long. If you're going to do stuff to annoy everybody around you who also paid a ticket to be there, then you deserve to be kicked out. Anytime I hear one of these stories about how a fan was abused or his sign, which seemingly there's nothing wrong with the sign, was taken away from him, he was kicked out, I always take those stories with a grain of salt until it's confirmed, because chances are the guy's either lying through his teeth or he was probably acting like a jackass. And in this case, it seems like he was acting like a jackass and probably got what he deserved. So let's talk about this show on Monday night. First of all, as far as the commentary goes, JBL was insufferable on this show. It's like Jekyll and Hyde. I mean, sometimes he brings a certain amount of levity and humor to the team, and it's actually kind of refreshing. But of late, and I'm sure Vince McMahon has a lot to do with this, but he is absolutely insufferable. He's been insufferable for weeks now, quacking about $9.99. Midway through the show, I literally screamed, shut the fuck up, at my television. I've never done that before. I've never shouted shut the fuck up as I'm watching the show at the television. I had an inanimate object. It was cathartic. But the announcing is as bad as it's ever been. Okay, they need to dig up the corpse of Gorilla Monsoon, prop him up at ringside, and stick Bobby Heenan out there with him. And Heenan can't even speak anymore. Doesn't matter. They would still be better than these guys. So we had a highlight reel. Open the show. Nearly 20 minutes for a segment that could have taken 5. Welcome to 3-Hour Raws. Actually, I can't even say that, because you could probably say the same thing about every Triple H promo ever that opened an episode of Raw, even back on the 2-hour shows. So out comes the Authority, Triple H, Randy Orton with pants, Corporate Kane, Seth Rollins, who grew up in Davenport, Iowa, which is about 170 miles away from Des Moines. They're not exactly close to each other, but he got lots of applause, like the hometown boy would, which seemed to catch WWE off guard. They were not expecting this. Apparently, from people who were there, not a single Seth Rollins shirt on sale at the concessions. Oops. That sucks. Triple H and Jericho, they insulted each other. Triple H made fun of Jericho's scarf, which actually did look quite ridiculous. Jericho made fun of Triple H's pink tie. What's wrong with a pink tie? I have a pink tie. Hunter corrected him and said, it's Violet Nimrod, which was one of the best lines of the night. And according to that leaked Raw script, it was actually completely improvised. So yet again, another example. Some of the best dialogue is not scripted, it's off the cuff. Another reason why the product sucks. Every word. I was amazed when I looked at that script. Every single word of everybody's promo is scripted out. Word for word for word. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable the level of detail, how they don't trust anybody on this show except the very tippy-top veterans. Every single word has to be scripted out. No wonder everybody sounds robotic when they do promos. Triple H was on Chris Jericho's podcast this week, by the way. It was a two-parter. I enjoyed it. You know, again, it's Triple H talking about stuff and talking himself up, and he talks about DX and his buddies and everything else, and you know, whatever. It is what it is. I'm sure there's, elements of creative license in there, certain parts of what he's talking about. But there was a lot of interesting stuff in there as well, including a funny story. The very first night he ever rode from town to town with the members of the clique and how that night ended. It went from the arena to a Denny's to the emergency room. So I thought that was kind of funny. And he talked about Bray Wyatt and the Performance Center and the NXT guys and how he came to be, you know, more involved in the backstage scene with Vince McMahon. And one day, you know, when Vince dies, because even he admits Vince is never going to retire. He's never going to step down. Triple H will assume the throne when Vince kicks the bucket, and Vince is probably going to live to be 125. So it's not going to happen anytime soon. It's a good interview, though. You should check it out. Better than this show. Better than this Monday Night Raw was this podcast with Triple H. So Triple H says, after rewatching Cena vs. Lesnar, the slaughter at SummerSlam, he's not sure that it's best for business to put John Cena in there with Brock again. He may name a new number one contender. And you knew right there they were just trying to fill time this week because they're not naming a new number one contender. I don't think anybody believes, even for a split nanosecond, that they were taking John Cena out of that match and changing the main event. But that was the storyline throughout the entire show, which made the entire show pointless. Even later on, Paul Heyman came out to cut a promo on John Cena, and not one time alluded to the fact that somebody other than John Cena might get the shot at Night of Champions. So this whole thing was just a waste of time. Everybody in the ring thought they deserved a title shot. This brought out John Cena, who was once again in serious Cena mode, on this show, no comedy. Don't worry, if you wanted some John Cena comedy, he saved that for SmackDown. He said Triple H can't take away his title shot. If he tries to, he will sue him. Yes, he threatened Triple H with legal action. Just what the fans want to see. Top babyface threatening to sue people. And even Triple H, the heel, mocked him for this. Randy Orton reminded everybody that he still has not gotten his one-on-one rematch for the championship since dropping it at WrestleMania. Jericho reminded him that he lost to Roman Reigns at SummerSlam, to which Orton said, that loss means nothing. At least they're openly acknowledging on TV now that these matches don't mean anything. This brought out Roman Reigns, which led to Triple H making a six-man tag team main event of John Cena, Roman Reigns, and Chris Jericho against Randy Orton, Seth Rollins, and the Demon Kane. That's what Triple H said. He got his canes confused. He was cane-fused. I much preferred Scuba Kane, personally, from that Cheap Pops cartoon they put up on WWE.com before they abruptly took it down. In fact, this show has gotten so bad, I would much rather sit through a three-hour version of Cheap Pops than this garbage. I think it would be more entertaining. I still don't know why they took the cartoon down. Supposedly, somebody's head exploded or popped off and it may have been a sensitivity to other world events that have been happening lately. I think that's a stretch. It's a fucking cartoon, but whatever. They took it down. Miz and Cesaro beat Sheamus and Dolph Ziggler, who look like best buds out there, despite the fact that Sheamus has bro-kicked Ziggler in the face no less than 1,000 times over the last 2 years. When he wasn't in the ring, Miz was sitting in the makeup chair at ringside, having his face touched up. Damian Mizdow was out there with him for moral support. Ziggler went for a Famouser, Miz slipped out, sent his stunt double in to take his place, referee wouldn't allow it. Ziggler caught Mizdow from behind with the zigzag, but then he got laid out by Miz with the skull-crushing finale and pinned. Ziggler was the most over guy in this entire match. I mean, loud, let's go Ziggler chants. So I laughed when he took the losing fall here. We then got the first of three horrendous segments titled Growing Up Bella. More like Throwing Up Bella. It was Nikki Bella sitting in a chair telling various fake stories about how her sister Brie ruined her life growing up. They're ruining my life with these segments is what they're doing. So first, Brie stole her prom date. And then Brie failed her driving test when they were 16, and Nikki had to drive her sister around everywhere. And then one day, Brie stole Nikki's license and wrecked her car. They showed pictures of the car before and after, and they weren't even the same car. And then Brie gave the officer Nikki's license, and Nikki got in trouble for it. Then Brie almost didn't graduate, so Nikki took Brie's final exam for her, because we're supposed to believe that Nikki is the one with the brains in that family. But I never told anyone. That's how all of these segments ended, with Nikki saying, but I never told anyone. John Cena and I had sex the other night, and he thinks I used the pill when I didn't, but I never told anyone. These segments were shit. Speaking of shit, up next was one of the worst matches of the year. It was a Total Divas six-woman tag team match pitting Summer Rae, Naomi, and Layla against Cameron, Eva Marie, and Rosa Mendez. Thank God they kept it short. That's all I can say. Divas Stopwatch had this at 1:05. Absolutely nothing happened. All the Divas got in the ring, and the babyfaces fought off the heels, or at least I assume they're supposed to be the heels. I don't watch their shitty reality show, nor will I ever watch their shitty reality show. If we're basing heel or face orientation purely off wrestling ability, then they were most definitely the heels. You would think, well, they weren't out there for that long. How bad could they be? Pretty damn bad. Eva Marie and I think it was Rosa took drop kicks, had to take a bump. Okay, that's it. Just eat the drop kicks and take a back bump. And you watch these women and you would think it was their first day at wrestling school. So then all the baby faces hold hands and they pose for the crowd and yay, don't forget Total Divas this Sunday on E! What in the name of God did this segment do to get anybody interested in seeing Total Divas? If you're a fan of the show, you're already going to watch. If you're a new fan or you've never seen one single episode, name one thing about that segment that would get someone to go, wow, I can't wait to see what happens on Sunday. This did more to get people to not watch that show than watch it. And it's not the first time they've done this. Do you remember the awful Miz TV segment with all of the cast members before the first season, the one where Brie Bella's nipple popped out? Okay, that's the only reason I remember it. That segment accomplished nothing to get people excited for that show. It went all of 3 minutes. Nobody said anything of note. Eva Marie slapped Jerry Lawler, I think, and that was it. These are the creative ideas that WWE comes up with to promote Total Divas. Air a 3-minute video package filled with crappy clips from the actual show. That's it. That's all you got to do. This accomplished nothing. Between this and the stuff with the Bellas, they have set the women's movement back about 11 decades. You know, even Susan B. Anthony is watching this segment from the grave going, what the fuck? Mark Henry and Big Show against Luke Harper and Eric Rowan. What a boring match. I flipped over to the Fight Network during part of it, and I saw Team 3D defending their IWGP tag titles in Japan against Giant Bernard and Carl Anderson. So, a few years old, obviously, but I was far more entertained by that big man match than I was this one. And I like the Wyatts, but this was just a bore. Rusev ran down to save us, attack Mark Henry for the DQ. Indeed, racist Rusev lives on. He attacked the only black dude in the entire match. This would not be the last of these two that we would see on this show. We were then told that Michael Sam was invited to show up on Raw this week to tell his story. They said that they would give him an open mic to speak his mind. And for those of you, and by the way, open mic my ass. For those of you who don't know anything about football, don't live in this country, perhaps. Michael Sam made headlines. He's the first openly gay player to be drafted in the NFL. He played in some exhibition games for the St. Louis Rams, ended up getting cut before the season started. And he wasn't bad at all, but they just went with the guys who they felt were better than Michael Sam. You know, that's their prerogative. I don't look at what happened as a hate crime. You know, that's their decision. So, of course, this turned into an even bigger story. And enter WWE. Desperate for ratings, going up against Monday Night Football this week. They know they're going to have their asses handed to them, so let's invite Michael Sam and let him tell his story, whatever story that is. It's just a desperate attempt for publicity. It's something TNA would do. How many reject reality stars and athletes has TNA brought in over the years? It's a TNA move. And what makes me laugh is that they invite this guy. They invite this guy on Raw. Okay, multiple times they mention this, and they air commercials for this on the show. Knowing full well there was a good chance he wasn't going to show up. And you know what? Newsflash, people, he was never going to show up. If he had any hope of ending up back in the NFL, there was no way in hell he was showing up on this show. If he had bothered to watch the show over the last 2 weeks, then there's really no way he ever would have showed up. But Stephanie McMahon writes this really nice message that they posted on their website. You know, exhibiting class and dignity rarely shown in professional sports. Michael Sam, WWE invites you to next Monday's Raw to speak of your struggle to succeed, lessons you've learned along the way, the courage it takes to be yourself, and the prospects of your continued journey. You are a role model who, by example, can encourage everybody to stand up and openly be themselves. What a nice letter, right? What a heartfelt, heartwarming letter. Well, Michael Sam goes and he signs with the Dallas Cowboys. And all of a sudden, all mentions of Michael Sam on WWE.com, including Stephanie's letter, which were front and center on the page, they mysteriously vanish. They disappear. Nowhere to be found. Instead, they announce that Jerry Springer will appear on Raw this Monday for an intervention with the Bella Twins. From Michael Sam to Jerry Springer. WWE, then, now, and forever. And they have since posted a new message to Michael Sam congratulating him and extending an invite to appear on a future episode of Raw. Whatever. I just thought to go from Michael Sam to taking all of it down as though it never happened and then go right to Jerry Springer. It just reeks of desperation. And that's WWE in a nutshell right now. Paul Heyman was out next to talk about John Cena's rematch with Brock Lesnar at Night of Champions. Speaking of Lesnar, apparently WWE is free to book him on any Raw or pay-per-view going forward that they want. That was some of the big news coming out of this week. They'll have to pay whatever the agreed-upon price is to use him. You know, they're not going to get him for free, but they can do so as often or as little as they want to. So I think it's pretty likely that we'll see him at more than just the Royal Rumble and WrestleMania. We may see him at every pay-per-view going forward. Also makes it easier for them to keep the title on him, which they should. You know, there's other matches between now and Mania that you could do with him that would be appealing. I ran down a whole list of guys a few weeks ago here on the podcast, and I see other news items now that Big Show may be a rumored next opponent for Brock Lesnar. And he was one of the guys on my list, and I would be okay with that. I mean, look, Big Show's not a new name. Do I want to see Big Show headlining pay-per-views? Not necessarily. But there's unfinished business there. And I think that those two guys, forget what happened at the Royal Rumble. They had that it wasn't even a match. It was an angle that they did with Lesnar and Big Show earlier this year at the Royal Rumble, and Lesnar just assaulted him with a chair, and then he walked out. That wasn't a match. I would like to think that these guys still have some chemistry together like they did 11 years ago, because some of the matches they had 11 years ago were not bad. In fact, their stretcher match at Judgment Day in 03, and stretcher matches in WWE, generally speaking, suck. They're no good. They had a stretcher match that was one of the best matches of that year that I enjoyed. It was actually really, really good. Now, again, that's 11 years ago. Big Show is 11 years older. Brock Lesnar is 11 years older, and now he's doing the MMA gimmick. He's not really a wrestler so much like he used to be, but I still think those two guys could have a certain chemistry in the ring. There is unfinished business. There's a history there. And look, I'd rather they have Brock Lesnar knock off Big Show than put Brock Lesnar in there with Bray Wyatt and have him mow down Bray Wyatt. Let him mow down Big Show. He needs bodies. You got to put bodies in there against the guy. So I don't really have a problem if Big Show's going to be, you know, an opponent for him at a B show in December or Hell in a Cell or something, then you know what? So be it. I'm not really bothered by that. I honestly see them having John Cena, go back to Night of Champions here, they're going to have the rematch. I see them having John Cena beat Brock Lesnar's ass, since that's what Cena's crowing about now in his promos. I'm not going to beat the guy, I'm going to beat his ass. Okay, fine. So he beats his ass, he ends up with a non-finish of some kind, and then that builds to a Hell in a Cell match in October. That's how I could see this going down. If they wanted to blow off Cena-Lesnar one more match inside the Cell, that would be okay with me. That's exactly what happened with Brock Lesnar and The Undertaker in 2002. I think the same thing happens here. But back to the promo. No mention of any of the other men in the six-man tag team main event, because even Paul Heyman knows that the main event of Night of Champions is not changing. This was the weakest of his recent promos. It's amazing to me that they have Paul Heyman under contract at a time when they're so creatively bankrupt, yet they won't consult him on any ideas. Even Zeb Coulter, who's had lots of success booking in Puerto Rico, even creatively in TNA. They've got both of these guys under contract at the same time, but they need an army of 15 writers to write these shows. And what a great job they've been doing, by the way. Jack Swagger and Curtis Axel. Zeb Coulter, who I just mentioned, is back. Ryback is out hurt, so Axel is a man without a program. During the match, Bo Dallas came out. He set up three chairs on stage, each of which were filled by a random person we've never seen before. Swagger won with the ankle lock. Bo then introduced us to his three guests, all of whom have been impacted in a negative way, in some kind of negative fashion, by Jack Swagger being a loser and letting down his country. First, we had Richie, a farmer who bet an entire month's salary on Swagger beating Rusev at SummerSlam. First of all, if you bet on wrestling, you're an idiot. Second of all, if you bet on any match involving Jack Swagger, you deserve to go bankrupt. So, old McDonald lost his farm. Next, we had Angelo, who was a singer who came to this country many years ago. So despondent was Angelo that he failed his citizenship exam and is now being deported back to Italy. I wish somebody would deport this creative team. Finally, we had Jennifer. Jennifer said her son's favorite wrestler was Jack Swagger. Not the shiniest crayon in the box, is Jennifer's son. After SummerSlam, her son now idolizes Vladimir Putin. And Bo Dallas had them all stand up and repeat that all you have to do is believe. You guys know I'm a Bo Dallas fan. I like the guy. I'm a believer, okay? I believe this segment was no good. It was intended to be funny, and it wasn't funny at all. I thought it was stupid, and the fans didn't care either. This was dumb. Adam Rose made his first in-ring appearance on Raw since July against Titus O'Neil. Heath Slater was in Titus's corner. The guy in the bunny suit with the rosebuds confronted Heath. Heath shoved the bunny down, and in retaliation, the bunny used a double leg takedown on Heath Slater and started the ground and pound and beat the crap out of him. Maybe it's Chael Sonnen in the costume. I don't know. This, of course, distracted Titus, who was promptly rolled up by Adam Rose for the win. My challenge to WWE still stands. That's all I'm going to say. Bobby Roode sent out a tweet during this match that said, "What the fuck am I watching?" What the fuck indeed. Rusev made quick work of Zack Ryder. Mark Henry came out after the match. He got in the ring. Rusev bailed. Got great heat for doing so. Henry asked him why he was so scared. And Mark Henry said, "I'm scared too. I'm scared of what I might do to you." He's opening an international wing in the Hall of Pain. He said Rusev will be the first inductee. This was actually one of the few bright spots on this entire show, I thought, was Mark Henry's promo. I thought his promo here was actually really good. So that was a plus. And then Stephanie McMahon came to the ring, and she brought out Nikki Bella. And the crowd immediately begins chanting boring. As soon as Nikki starts talking, they just rain down with boring chants. And Stephanie did her best to try to drown them out, insulting the crowd. Stephanie said that she's thankful there's no Brie in any of her three daughters. She rewarded Nikki with a shot at the Divas Championship. And if I'm Natalya, I am more than a little pissed off at that little development, although I'm sure they'll never bring it up. Brie Bella came to the ring. She asked Nikki if everything that's happened, if all of this was just for a title shot. Now, this is important. Remember this. Brie asks Nikki, "Why are you spreading these lies about me?" Okay? Remember that. AJ Lee comes down to the ring, skipping down to the ring, so now they're taking AJ and Paige and incorporating them into this storyline, which sounds horrible, until you realize that it probably means we're getting a... in fact, I think they've already announced a triple threat match for Night of Champions. Maybe it'll turn into a four-way. Right now, I think it's a three-way, AJ, Paige, and Nikki Bella, instead of a singles match between Nikki and Brie. That tells me they're afraid to put the two of them in the ring together for a singles match, as they should be. Crowd chanted for CM Punk. AJ pointed out that she still deserves a rematch for the Divas title. This brought out Paige. She said, "You can't talk about the Divas title without the bloody Divas champion." Nikki told Brie that she would forgive her on one condition. That is that she has to quit the company. Now, recall a few moments earlier when Brie exposed the fact that Nikki was lying about her all night long with those throwing up Bella segments. All of a sudden here, Nikki says, "I'll forgive you for all the shit that you've done to me. You know, the phony shit that you said never happened. If you agree to quit your job." And Brie looked like she was considering it. She even mouthed something at one point that said that. Like, I'll consider it, or if that's what it takes, or if that's what you want. Or she mouthed something that just completely flew in the face with what she said earlier when she came out at the beginning of the promo. It's like, it's unbelievable. Worst show on television. Absolutely the worst show on TV this is. Nikki starts yelling at Brie. She's like, go, go. No, here's another thing. Okay, so Nikki tells her, if you quit, I'll forgive you. And Brie turns around, and Nikki starts yelling at her, go, leave, you're a quitter. What? So yeah, she's yelling, leave me alone, which is funny because that's the exact same thing I was shouting at my TV during this segment. And Brie turns around and she shoves Nikki, and Nikki hits Paige, and both women fall down. Brie left. AJ picked up the Divas title, went to leave with it, but Stephanie the Giant stopped her, just towered over AJ here. She demanded that she hand the belt back over to her. People were into this only because I think they like the idea of Stephanie versus AJ. They look at that as the bigger match that probably will never happen. AJ handed the belt over. She skipped away. Stephanie gave the belt back to Paige. And mercifully, this segment ended. This was painful. Painful to sit through this segment. And it just made no sense. And it goes to what I said earlier at the beginning of this review. It's one thing to have awful acting, which this had, and just be a bad story, bad storytelling. But in the same promo, in the same segment, from 1 minute to just 3 or 4 minutes later, to have one of your characters come out and say one thing, and then 5 minutes later, you just completely forget that she even said that. We're not even talking week to week anymore. We're talking in the same segment. From 1 minute to the next, they can't even keep their story straight. They aired a commercial for the next episode of the Monday Night War, focusing on DX, insinuating that they were the reason the ratings began to turn in WWE's favor, which is laughable. Mike Tyson was the real catalyst. Tyson and Steve Austin. Those are the two guys that got the ball rolling in the other direction. And you could throw Vince McMahon in there, too. DX played a part, absolutely. I'm not trying to downplay their role overall. They were part of that whole period. But not nearly as big as Mike Tyson or Steve Austin. And I haven't watched that episode, the latest episode yet of the Monday Night War. So maybe it was just a tease in the commercial, and in the actual show it's not as bad, and they don't try to credit DX as being the force behind the rating shift. At least I hope not, because that's complete bullshit. This week, we're getting Chris Jericho and Bray Wyatt on Raw in a steel cage. Why on Raw and not Night of Champions? Football, that's why. Hopefully Jericho's not as terrified as little kids like John Cena is. He's got 3 kids at home, so he should be fine. We're also getting another SummerSlam rematch, Randy Orton against Roman Reigns, although I'm not sure why we're supposed to care about what the outcome of that match is, since Randy Orton apparently doesn't. Goldust and Jimmy Uso. Goldust and Stardust, they tried to apologize to the Usos before the match for their actions the week before, but the Usos attacked them. Goldust and Jimmy Uso were having a match. Stardust, on the outside, kicked Jey Uso's injured knee. Jimmy flew out for the save, but he got kicked in the process. Goldust ended up pinning him with the final cut. Afterwards, Stardust smashed Jey Uso's knee with a chair. Jey shrieked in agony. He sold the shit out of this injury. He did a better job acting here than anybody else in that last Divas segment. I'm digging heel dust so far. One of the few acts on this show that kind of the slow build, and I'm digging it. I'm digging it so far. I still think they squandered so much with what they had with the Rhodes brothers. They were so hot. I had somebody email me, completely unrelated, but they mentioned in their email they had just watched the match between The Shield and Goldust and Cody from Battleground last October, which was an awful show, but that match was one of the best matches of the year in the company. It was awesome, and it had great heat. And Dusty Rhodes, I think, maybe was out there with his kids, and when they won, because I think they won the tag team belts in that match, but the whole thing was their jobs were on the line. Actually, no, they didn't win the belts. What it was they had to win the match in order to get their jobs back, for Cody to get his job back, and they won, and Dusty came out, and it was emotional. They were crying, and the people were going crazy. The wrestlers came out. The whole mid-card came out on stage to celebrate with them. It was such a great moment. And it just felt like ever since then, it was just downhill from there. And those guys were so over, and they reached a point where they were off television. It's like WWE just completely forgot what to do with those guys. And when they finally made their way back on television and they were put back in a meaningful storyline, people didn't care. So now they were wrestling on television every week. They weren't getting the same kind of reactions. And I could just picture Vince McMahon sitting there with his, you know, merry band of misfits backstage trying to script these shows going, well, these guys aren't over, so we've got to come up with a new idea for them. I know. Let's dress Cody Rhodes up as a miniature version of Goldust. Goldust is Batman, and we'll make Cody his Robin, which is kind of what I think of whenever I see Cody Rhodes out there jumping around. Now, he looks like Robin to me. I don't know why. And to his credit, Cody has embraced it. I think he's doing as good a job with it as he can do, and I'm intrigued by the heel turn now. But I just think they squandered so much that they had with them as babyfaces, just as the Rhodes brothers, not as some stupid gimmick. I mean, Goldust is, you know, he's been doing the gimmick for so long, but Cody was just Cody, and he was over. He didn't need face paint. He didn't need a stupid gimmick. And I think that was on WWE. They messed that one up. John Cena, Roman Reigns, and Chris Jericho in the main event beat Corporate Kane, not Demon Kane, Randy Orton, and Seth Rollins. Triple H was out at ringside observing, because whoever impressed him the most in this match would win the title shot against Brock Lesnar at Night of Champions. Match went about 20 minutes. It was fine. Good match, but we've seen so many great six-man tags on Raw, this one really wasn't anything special. Cena hit an AA on Kane at the end, and then inexplicably... Now, remember the rules of the match. The rule was, Triple H is going to be at ringside, he is observing, whoever impresses him the most will get the title shot at Brock Lesnar. Inexplicably, knowing this, John Cena tags in Roman Reigns, who spears Kane and gets the pin. What sense does that make? You know what? In a lot of ways, it was the perfect cap to this show. An insulting 3 hours that made me wonder why I even bother. Every now and then I'll have those moments and then I kind of shake it off because I still like it and I do it for the podcast and everything else. This was one of those nights that made me sit there when it was over and shake my head and wonder why the hell I bother. That was Raw on Monday night. Now this Monday is being billed as the season premiere of Raw. That would make this most recent episode that I just reviewed their season finale. If this was any other show on TV, which they love being compared to so much, in their Did You Know facts and everything else, it would have ended up being their series finale. But because it's wrestling, they get a pass. And you know what? Maybe that's the problem. Let's talk NXT. Yeah, I can't believe how much of an escape this show is for me, and yet it's produced under the WWE banner. It's a WWE show, but the difference between this show and Raw is unbelievable to me. The fact that the same company could be responsible for these two products simultaneously confounds me. But I'm happy it exists because it's my own little escape each week. At least I know I'm going to get a good wrestling show, a good 1 hour of wrestling each week. I can always rely on NXT for that. This was the night of squashes in preparation for next week's live takeover special, and I enjoyed it. Far better than Raw. I mean, high praise, I know. A root canal would have been far better than Raw. Think about this. They packed 6 matches into a 1 hour show. Each of the participants in the 4-way at TakeOver had a match, plus Charlotte's match with Alexa Bliss, and the finals of the tag team tournament. 6 matches. Tom Phillips, Byron Saxton, Renee Young got the call this week. By the way, I saw it reported in this week's Observer that WWE had wanted to send William Regal to scout talent at PWG's Battle of Los Angeles, but he couldn't make it because of a health issue. Apparently, it's something to do with his voice. That might explain why they shifted him off commentary and into the GM role. So hopefully it's nothing too serious. The big news is that Kenta will be making his debut at NXT TakeOver this Thursday. Ric Flair will be on that show as well. The rumor, I don't think it's confirmed yet by WWE. The belief, though, the rumor is that Flair will be there to introduce Kenta. This makes me hopeful, is what it makes me. This guy has obviously got the backing of Triple H, since Triple H was instrumental in getting him signed. I don't think he wants to see the guy fail. So he's got the backing of Triple H. They trotted Hulk Hogan out there for his signing in Japan to put him over. Now Ric Flair might be there introducing him for his debut on TV. Those are some pretty big endorsements right there. Now, they need to promote the hell out of this during Raw this Monday is what they have to do. Really make it seem like a big deal. and that you have to subscribe to the WWE Network just to see it. International superstar Kenta will be there. And if Flair is going to be there introducing him, then mention that. Put Ric Flair's name out there because he's a draw still in the minds of a lot of people. That's what they have to do. They have 3 hours of Raw this Monday night. Surely they can fit a few commercials in for this show. Charlotte beat Alexa Bliss with the cutter. Oddly, Tom Phillips never referred to it as Bow Down to the Queen, so I don't know if they have changed the name, if she's coming up with a new name, or if he just didn't remember the name of the move, but he called it a cutter, which is what it is. Bayley came out after the match, cut a promo saying that she's going to be the new women's champion, and again, she extended her hand for a handshake. Instead, Charlotte shoved her down. Bayley came back with a belly-to-Bayley suplex. Charlotte runs off. Bayley celebrates with the belt. On Twitter, Gus wrote in. He had a great comment. He wanted to know what I would think if Bayley went heel and started using a bear hug as her finisher. I just think that's awesome. Tyler Breeze beat Ty Dillinger with the beauty shot. I love the way they've turned Breeze from just purely a comedy character into a serious threat to the title without sacrificing too much of what makes the character so great. I almost feel he'd be better off getting a long run with the title on NXT instead of a call-up to the main roster. Because once he does, he'll just be jobbed out on main event. You know, within a month, he'll be jobbed out on main event. I guarantee it. So for him to get, let's say, a shot to run with the belt for 6 months or 9 months or whatever on this show and build that character and evolve the character even more might actually be a better career course for him. We've got a Tyson Kidd vignette up next here. We went from Tyler Breeze and Ty Dillinger to Tyson Kidd. Ty. I could see what he was doing here in this promo. I thought it was kind of clever. He was giving all these compliments. This guy is a high flyer, and this guy is this, and this guy is that. And, oh, by the way, we also have Tyler Breeze, Sami Zayn, and Adrian Neville in this match. So even though I knew the punchline, I still thought it was funny. He basically said things that made you think he was describing each person. In reality, he was just putting himself over four different times. Triple H was no doubt impressed at this feat. And then we had the Enzo Amore, Colin Cassidy segment. I had already seen this on YouTube a couple days before, on Facebook, wherever the video was posted. And they aired the whole thing here on NXT. This was great. I would love to see them do more segments like this with these guys. So Enzo is in a hair-versus-hair match with Sylvester Laforte at TakeOver. And so we have Colin Cassidy holding a camera, filming Enzo, and they're going into this beauty salon for some unknown reason. And there's a lot of comedy here, actual comedy that makes you laugh, unlike whatever that is that John Cena does on television. And he goes into a back room, and we see this woman, Carmella, for the first time. Carmella is a diva in training on the roster. This was her television debut. She's a beautiful lady. And I don't know, she had this accent. She must be from Jersey or somewhere here on the East Coast. If not, she had a great accent that she used here. I think she would be a fine addition to them as an act, put the three of them together permanently. Maybe that's the idea. But she, I guess, works at the salon or runs the salon, and they know her, and she knows them. And, hey, guys, how you doing? And, you know, Colin Cassidy, as she comes over for an embrace, is filming her ample cleavage, and she goes, up here. So Enzo is there for some kind of hair cream, and I guess they didn't clue Carmella in as far as why they need a whole bucket of this stuff, but she went and got the bucket and brought it back. And there was a guy who brought his dog in, and the cream got on the dog, and I guess clumps of hair started coming off the dog, and that's when the segment ended. And anyway, you got to see it. It was actually really, I thought it was funny, and I thought the three of them had great chemistry together. And the hair cream would come in later on. It would come into play later on again here on this show. Tyson Kidd beat Adam Rose with the sharpshooter. You know, okay match, nothing to write home about. Sami Zayn beat Marcus Louis, who had Sylvester Laforte in his corner, beat him by submission with the Koji Clutch. First time I've seen Marcus Louis in singles action, and I realized as I'm watching this, I know nothing about this guy. So I looked up his bio on WWE.com, and this is what jumped out at me. A former rugby player, Marcus served his country and became a decorated military riot police officer. He also worked in a high-security psychiatric prison, dealing with some of the world's most deranged human beings. So I guess he dealt with the creative team. See, that's a gimmick that I think would be a lot more entertaining than what he's doing now. You know, they talk about sometimes the best characters are just an extension of your real-life personality or your real-life background. I think the Boss Man may have actually been a corrections officer early on in his career, and that's where the big Boss Man character came from, I think. I think he was. So, for a guy like Marcus Louis, you see what he's doing here with Lafort, and he's just part of the stereotypical French tag team. You know, boo us, we're French, ooh. And you read something like that, this guy is like he's a riot police officer, and he worked in a psychiatric prison. I'm like, wow, that actually sounds kind of cool. And it would be nice if they did, let's say, a video package explaining this to us, which they never did. So that would be a far more entertaining gimmick than what he's doing now. After the match, Kaz and Enzo attacked the Frenchman. They were about to dump the bucket of the hair removal cream all over Lafort, but he managed to escape. Make your appointment at Bosley now, Enzo screamed, which was awesome. Adrian Neville beat CJ Parker with a red arrow, which is the most spectacular finish of anybody in the entire company, I have decided. And that includes the main roster, NXT, everybody. It is, even after all these months of seeing it, it's still an amazing move to watch him pull off. Sin Cara and Kalisto against the Vaudevillains in the main event, finals of the tag team tournament to determine a number one contender to the Ascension at TakeOver. I didn't really like this match, for the final match of a tournament that's been happening for weeks now. It felt very anticlimactic. Kalisto really didn't stand out here the way that he did in that match against Sami Zayn and Adam Rose a few weeks ago. Hopefully he'll have a chance to shine at TakeOver. He and Sin Cara beat the Vaudevillains here. And speaking of TakeOver, it's time for some TakeOver predictions for the card coming up this Thursday. It'll be live on the WWE Network, 2 hours starting at 8 p.m. Eastern, TakeOver 2, Electric Boogaloo. And we'll start from the bottom of the card here and work our way up. We have, again, the introduction of Kenta. I believe Ric Flair will be there to introduce him. I don't expect him to be in a match. You know what? I could see them trotting out somebody like CJ Parker to interrupt, and CJ Parker ends up getting his head kicked off by Kenta. That's probably along the lines of what his first appearance will be. Bull Dempsey and Mojo Rawley. I got to go with my boy Bull from Brooklyn. Got to represent. Hair versus hair, Enzo Amore and Sylvester Lafort. I'm going to go with Enzo Amore here. We're going to see Sylvester get shaved on this show. The Ascension defending their tag team titles against Sin Cara and Kalisto. I'm going to go with the Ascension. I don't see a title change happening here. I just feel like they're going to keep those belts on the Ascension. Kalisto and Sin Cara, they'll come close but fall short. And in the end, the Ascension retains. Charlotte defending her NXT Women's title against Bayley. I think Bayley takes the championship here. There's been a lot of rumors that Charlotte's going to get called up soon to the main roster. And look, she can get called up even with the NXT title. That's what happened with Paige, and Paige ended up forfeiting the belt. They could do the same thing with her. I don't know if they want to do that with back-to-back women's champions, just have them get called up and then vacate the belt. We just had a tournament. I don't think they want to have another tournament back-to-back. So if there's any truth at all to those rumors, and she's going to get called up sooner rather than later, I would figure they would want the belt off of her, and I think Bayley would be the person to take the title from her. I think it'll be a great moment for her. Everybody will react. Everybody in the NXT arena there loves Bayley. She's over. She's a good wrestler. And you know what? As far as stories go, they don't mention it. And I don't know why they never bring this up. They never show us highlights. Maybe they will in the video package if they show one for them at the TakeOver show. But Bayley was turned on by Charlotte. They used to be friends, they were partners, and they were feuding with the BFFs. And then one day, Charlotte turned on Bayley, and she hooked up with Summer Rae and Sasha. And Bayley never got her revenge because Charlotte went away, supposedly with some kind of injury, although I think when she came back, her chest was a little bit bigger, so whatever her surgery was. She came back, and they never really brought that up again. Certainly not recently they don't bring it up. You would think these two are feuding. There was never any resolution to that story. They never had that that big one-on-one match. So I think it would be a nice cap if they would just bring it up to have Bayley finally beat her, take the title, and get her revenge. So I see this as the culmination of that story, even if they don't. So Bayley is my pick. I think she wins the championship. And then the main event, we have Adrian Neville defending the NXT title in a four-way against Tyson Kidd, Tyler Breeze, and Sami Zayn. I expect this match to just kick all kinds of ass. And they should have time, too. They usually give these matches a good amount of time. I think that in the end, Adrian Neville keeps the title. I think he retains the championship. They've been playing up the fact that this guy's dumb, like on commentary. He's so stupid. Why would he agree to put his title on the line in a four-way match where he doesn't even have to get pinned? And they've really been playing that up so much so that I think in the end he probably wins and retains the championship. And as much as I'd like to see Tyler Breeze or Sami Zayn get the belt, and Sami Zayn could really use a big, big win. He hasn't really gotten too many of those recently. I think he'll be fine with or without the belt, unless he's getting called up. You know, if Neville loses the belt and his time is come and gone, what do you really do with him now? You know, where does he go from here? I feel like he kind of just flounders on NXT until they're ready to call him up. So I think Neville wins. He's my pick. He retains the championship. You've got a whole bunch of new talents making their way soon enough to TV. Fergal Devitt, Kevin Steen, Kenta, obviously, is going to be making his debut on this show. So they've got these great talents coming in. And the idea that any of those three working with Neville, working with Zayn, is exciting. You know, the future of NXT looks exciting. I wish the future of WWE right now on Raw and SmackDown looked as bright as the future of NXT does. It's just, I said it at the beginning of this review, it boggles my mind that the same company responsible for that shit show that we saw on Monday night is the same company putting out these shows every Thursday, week after week. And on weeks like this, where Raw doesn't, this show gives me hope for the future. ProWrestlingTees.com is the new home for Sound Off shirts and apparel. Get your official Solomonster Sounds Off logo t-shirt and other assorted designs like the new Eat, Sleep, Sound Off, Repeat shirt, which sounds an awful lot like a typical week for me. And I know it is for some of you guys as well. Now you can show your support for the podcast wherever you go by buying a shirt. Hell, buy two of them. Pro Wrestling Tees accepts PayPal as payment and ships internationally all over the world. The more shirts we sell, the more designs we'll be able to offer in the future, but we can only do that with your help. Be one of the first 25 people to buy a shirt, and you'll get a shout-out right here on the Sound Off. Visit ProWrestlingTees.com/SolomonsterSoundsOff to go directly to our new store. That's ProWrestlingTees.com/SolomonsterSoundsOff. I saw Bobby Lashley's fight at the Bellator show on Friday night, Bellator 123. Lashley with a dominant win over Josh Burns. Josh Burns looks like Tenzai's doppelganger. I think it's the tattoo. I mean, he's bald. He's kind of big. Not as big. Not as tall as Tenzai is. But the tattoos. He's got like the same body tattoos as him. I think that's what did it. Guy came in with an 8-7 overall MMA record. I think he was like 0-4 or 0-5 in Bellator. So this should have been a layup win for Lashley, and it was. Lashley looked good, but I can't really say he looked, you know, fantastic or anything. He was in there with a scrub. He was in there with a guy that he should have beaten, and he did. Cut the guy open, beat him with a rear naked choke in the end. So we'll see if TNA has him incorporate that rear naked choke into his matches going forward. Even if he does, we're not going to see it for a long time since they're already taped so far in advance. But they should show highlights of this on Thursday and really play it up like something big. Because they've got a guy now doing wrestling and MMA at the same time, and even though the guy was a scrub, most people probably don't know the difference, and you can show clips of Lashley just, you know, pounding the crap out of this guy, choking him out, really make him look like the destroyer that they call him on television. So it's a good night for Lashley. A bad night, though, I think, if you're an MMA purist, because of what they did at the end. I saw that. It wasn't even at the end. It was kind of like towards the end. They just this embarrassing segment. I'm sure many of you have seen it. I linked to it on my Twitter with Tito Ortiz and Stefan Bonner, who are going to have a fight in Bellator in November. And Stefan Bonner is out there in a full suit with a masked man. There's a guy in a mask with him. And he says to the interviewer, he goes, if I could just take the microphone from you for just a second. And it's funny because the guy won't let the microphone go. Bonner's trying to take it out of his hand. And the guy is smart. He goes, I don't know what's going on here, and I'm not going to let this fighter just take the mic, you know, because in pro wrestling you would do that. So he was tugging on the mic. The guy wouldn't let go, and finally Bonner's like, all right, I'll let you hold the mic. And he cuts this pro wrestling promo, like the verbiage, everything. It sounded like a scripted thing that you would hear on Monday Night Raw. And he says to Tito, you know, he says to the people, he goes, how many of you people like Tito Ortiz? I'm surprised he didn't be like, how many of you in the Bellator universe like this man? He goes, well, you wouldn't if you knew him. He goes, even the people that know him and friends, they don't like him when they get to know him. And then he rips the mask off this guy, and you could hear a pin drop and the tumbleweed fly by. Like, nobody knew who this guy was. Nobody cared. They never even explained who the guy was. I don't even think Stephen Bonner said at any point who this guy was. And as it turns out, it's a guy who was friends with Tito Ortiz for like 10 years. Maybe he helped train him. Supposedly the guy's a pro wrestler. I've never seen him before in my life. But he pulls the mask off and nobody knows who he is. Nobody cares. This whole thing was so bad. It was so embarrassing. And obviously you have a lot of MMA fans out there now who are like, I don't want pro wrestling, this pro wrestling crap on my MMA show. There's a lot of pro wrestling stuff or promotional techniques, even promos. You know, there was talk for a long time, I don't know if it was UFC or Bellator, but Strikeforce maybe, they wanted to bring Paul Heyman in. There was talk of bringing Heyman in, not like in an official capacity to work for the promotion. And again, I forget which promotion it was. But let's bring this guy in and have him work with some of our fighters on promos, which is a fantastic idea. And I don't think Heyman ever did that. But there's a lot that people could learn, I think, when it comes to, like, from a guy like Heyman in terms of, like, schooling these guys on the art of a promo and how, at the end of a fight, if you've had this blood feud with somebody and now the fight is over, you don't go on the microphone and say, no, I actually like the guy. We're going to go share a beer after the fight. We're cool. Like, I see fighters do that sometimes, and it drives me nuts. It's like, you guys are so stupid. Like, you don't get it. You don't get it. A guy like John Jones. Somebody wrote into me asking, do you think John Jones should embrace the heel character that people see him as? Because there's a lot of people out there who don't like John Jones at all. They think he's a scumbag. They think he's disingenuous, and he plays up his religion, this holier-than-thou thing, and in real life, he just behaves in a completely different way. And I think it like bothers John Jones that people hate him and look at him that way. But if I'm John Jones, I see things for how they are, and I play that shit up to a hilt the way that Floyd Mayweather does. He's got the right idea. That's why Floyd Mayweather is like the biggest pay-per-view attraction in the world, because that guy knows how to play up his character and the way people see him. A lot of people don't like Floyd Mayweather. They see him as being pompous and arrogant and all this stuff, and maybe he is. He plays it up. A guy like John Jones almost seems like he's afraid to play it up, and I don't understand why. Just embrace it. People will want to pay money to see this guy get his head knocked off his shoulders. So anyway, that's kind of the long-winded route to what I was trying to say, which is how there's a lot of things I think that, you know, if you're an MMA fighter or you're an MMA promoter, you can kind of borrow and cherry pick and learn from pro wrestling. Doing an actual pro wrestling angle blatantly like that on your television show, not a good idea. This was so lame. This was so lame. But hey, it's all anybody was talking about when this show was over. They weren't talking about Bobby Lashley. They weren't talking about the main event. They were talking about this angle that they did on this show. And I love how after Stephen Bonner, who looks like he could have a career in WWE when he's done with MMA, I love how they turn the mic over to Tito Ortiz, and Tito either wasn't clued in or just isn't very smart, and I don't think that's the case. I think Tito's probably a smart guy, but the first thing he says on the mic, he calls them both drug addicts. You two drug addicts. I don't know how smart that was, especially in a sport where there's so much, you know, you've got a lot of guys who are on a lot of shit, and they're constantly talking about drug testing. Now you got Tito Ortiz, who's building to a fight by calling his opponent a druggie. But it's no wonder Spike didn't renew Impact. They already have Bellator. What do you need two pro wrestling shows for when you already have one? Impact was the best wrestling show of the week. As much as I liked NXT, I debated between this and NXT. I'd give Impact a slight edge just because there were some big matches on this show. Not squashes, and the wrestling was largely good, and I think it was going to be an easy win for TNA. I mean, TNA would have really had to put on a bad show this week for me to rank Raw above Impact. Impact was a breath of fresh air, though, this week. MVP Kenny King and Lashley came out to open the show. MVP called Lashley the toughest man on the planet. Joe came down, Samoa Joe, that is, said Lashley wasn't even the toughest guy in this ring, and he challenged him to a match. They all attacked Joe. Security ran in to pull them apart. Crowd was hot for the entire thing. Joe is still the resident badass in TNA, even after years of doing nothing with the guy. Imagine how big he'd be right now if they had actually booked him properly, instead of putting him in so many bad angles and just downplaying him. Even when he wasn't in a bad angle, like the stupid shit where he ran around with a machete, he just, there were so many times where he just wasn't doing anything, but he's still over. Video package hyping Gail Kim and Taryn Terrell for the Knockouts title, the rubber match in this feud. Terrell won their first match last year, then Gail Kim won the ladder match, and Taryn Terrell got pregnant. She has not looked good since returning. Well, I mean, she looks sensational, but in the ring, she hasn't looked good. Part of that is, I think, getting used to the six-sided ring. Gail Kim took a scary bump in this match out to the floor. It was the spot where usually you run into the you run shoulder first into the ring post. Well, she missed the post and just flew out to the floor. So that looked like it sucked. And that wasn't the only scary bump taken during this match. Gail gave Taryn a neck breaker right on top of the steel ring steps. This was insane. Taryn's back when she landed, because her whole body couldn't fit on top of the steps. I mean, there's very limited space on top of the actual steps. You can't lay out your body, you know, in full. So she comes down for the neck breaker, and the back of her head and her neck land on the steps. But her back bent over the edge of the steps. Her whole body bent when she landed, like it was broken in half. It reminded me of Shawn Michaels hitting the edge of the casket at Royal Rumble and losing 4 years of his career because of it. You know, how she didn't break her back is a miracle. You know, I admire the effort. I admire the effort. You know, when these two are in the ring together, I look forward to it. When Gail Kim and Taryn Terrell are in the ring together, I really look forward to it. Like, it's a big deal because I know how hard they work. Gail Kim hit Eat Defeat. Taryn kicked out for the near fall. Taryn hit an RKO. Got a near fall out of that. She went up to the top rope, came off for a crossbody. Gail Kim rolled through, got the pin, kind of came out of nowhere. So it was a short match. I felt like, especially for a match that got video package treatment, not every match on this show will get video package. When it does, it's kind of a big deal. And for a match that got that, they could have given them a few extra minutes. You know, that's, I think, really the story for all the matches on this show. They're all way too short. They give these matches no more than 8 or 9 minutes max, and that's being generous. A lot of the other matches get 3 or 4. There's no reason for that. You know, there's no reason you can't give these guys a few extra minutes here, a few extra minutes there. It's just, it's too short. But this was still a good match. I enjoyed it. It's better than anything WWE is doing with the Divas right now. The two women embraced when the match was over. Crowd gave them a standing ovation. And all of a sudden, out came Jessica Havoc, who is the Havoc that TNA has been building up for weeks now. She was wearing this weird mask that reminded me of Bane from Batman. She's got long hair, but the sides of her head are shaved. Kind of an odd look. She looks like TNA's answer to what Awesome Kong used to be for them about 7 or 8 years ago. She's the new monster. Whatever happened, by the way, to that Amazon woman who debuted with Chris Sabin? The Alpha Female, I think they called her. She just disappeared. I just thought of her just now. Havoc attacked both women, laid them out with her move, which is Sheamus's white noise. Then she stacked them one on top of the other and stood over their lifeless bodies. Yeah, I'm watching this, and the only thing I'm thinking is, like, wow, a women's feud built around beating up other women and fighting for the championship. Not bad acting and phony stories about car crashes and prom dates. What a novel concept. Backstage, MVP met with Eric Young, tried to stir up some shit between him and Bobby Roode before their big number one contenders match later in the show. MVP did the same thing with Bobby Roode later on. He asked him, you know, do you feel you can really trust Eric Young not to cheat in your match? So, MVP, shit stirrer. We had two different segments on the show with the Bromans and DJ Zima at a New York City rooftop bar. I would love to know which one. I might have been there before. Each of them were waiting for their respective knockout to show up for a date. Yes, they have apparently each been chatting with a TNA knockout through Tinder. I don't use Tinder. I can't use it anyway because I'm still running iOS 6 on my iPhone. Apparently you need iOS 7 to run it, but I have heard about it. It's a dating app that mostly is used for hooking up. Why would Velvet Sky and Angelina Love need to be using Tinder? Can somebody explain that to me? Is that not a little far-fetched? It's just, I don't know. This whole thing was just too unbelievable for me. Eventually, Velvet Sky, Angelina Love show up, and they tell Robbie and Jesse, as long as you guys keep the ladies happy, we will keep you happy. Blowjobs for everybody! There's a t-shirt slogan. EC3 and Rockstar Spud were out next. Spud was wearing a dollar suit. I don't mean he paid a dollar for it. It was literally made out of dollar bills. EC3 said his violence against those responsible for putting Aunt Dixie through a table will not stop until his demands have been met. Demand number one, the immediate termination of Bully Ray. Well, demand number one met. Moving on, demand number two is that the words extreme and hardcore are no longer to be used in TNA because it's time to stop living in the past. You don't say. He also told the fans to stop chanting "You can't wrestle" at him, which of course led to all the sheep at the Manhattan Center chanting "You can't wrestle." And each time he would interject with "I'm very good" and other assorted comebacks. I thought it was clever the first time he did it because it was off the cuff. It wasn't planned. It wasn't scripted. The fans just started chanting it at him, and he just thought, hey, I'm going to chant "I'm very good." You know, like, yes, I can, I'm very good, and all that kind of stuff. Now that it's part of his act, I think it's kind of lame. Rhino ran out from the crowd. He attacked EC3. Then he challenged him to a match. EC3 said, fine, challenge accepted. Only thing is, tonight, it's going to be Rhino against Rockstar Spud. And somebody should remind EC3 that New York is no longer a death penalty state. Poor Spud. Magnus and Bram beat Gunnar and Sam Shaw after Bram gave Gunnar a chop block to his injured knee, rolled him up for the pin. Sam Shaw's new gimmick is that he freaks the fuck out if Gunnar is hurt, and he perceives that anybody is trying to hurt Gunnar or exploit an injury, he just goes completely out of his mind. They had a backstage segment before this where Gunnar asked Shaw why he put Gunnar's Marine uniform on the week before. You know, he's wearing Gunner's clothes. Now this. I don't like where this is going. Stop now before it's too late. That's all I have to say. Bobby Roode beat Eric Young with the Roode Bomb to become number one contender to the TNA title. EY hit a top rope elbow for a near fall. He went for a pile driver to Bobby Roode. Roode escaped. We got a few more near falls. Roode hit the Roode Bomb, got the pin. So this was a good match. Team 3D did an interview with Jeremy Borash where they said next week, match number two in the tag team title series against the Hardys and the Wolves would be a tables match. They're going to win the tag team titles and go into the Hall of Fame as champions. Yeah, we'll see about that. Six-way X Division match, which got no time. That seems to be the pattern now. You put six guys in the ring together and you give them 3 minutes. Homicide pinned Matic with the Gringo Killer, Crazy Steve, Low Key, DJ Zima, and Tigre Uno were also in this match. They did a bunch of moves. I mean, this is just getting really repetitive now. You know, especially when you give the same six guys 4 minutes every week to get all their spots in. It's not a match. It's just a spot fest, which is all it is. I mean, I thought the spot fest we got last week was kind of fun. Now it's just wearing on my nerves. It's like, this is the X Division? This is what we're supposed to get excited about? Just shove them all in there and, you know, I mean, I could just see the last guy coming out to make his entrance and you probably got somebody in the back who's already telling him, oh, go home. You know, they get the go home cue before they even hit the ring. You know, why not give these guys, let's say, 12 minutes and let the match breathe a little bit? Let each guy get a chance to shine and show off his moves and build to the finish instead of just going right to it. Afterwards, James Storm and the great Sonata came out. Sonata gave Manic a super kick, and the two of them dragged Manic's body up the ramp and to the back. Austin Aries came out for a promo. He called out James Storm and Sonata after Sonata spit green mist in his face the week before. So the kidnappers came back out. Storm said he would do the same for Manic that he did for Sonata, so I guess Manic is part of their crew now. Aries said that Sonata pissed off all of Japan when he turned on the great Muda and aligned with Storm, and he brought out Tajiri, who frankly did not look all that good, but he was over. This would seem to set up an Aries-Tajiri against Storm-Sonata match for Bound for Glory in Japan, but you know, you almost have to have Muda in there to give, you know, given his involvement in the whole storyline, so I figure maybe it's Tajiri and Muda as a team against Sonata and Matic, and you do Austin Aries in a singles match against James Storm. I could see them doing that. They've announced nothing, by the way, for Bound for Glory, aside from the Team 3D Hall of Fame induction. They haven't even so much as hinted at a direction for their so-called biggest event of the year, their biggest pay-per-view of the year. So I don't know what the hell is going on there. I mean, Bobby Roode gets his title match with Lashley on an upcoming episode of Impact that's already been taped. So I have no idea what their plans are. Maybe they don't have a plan. Seems that way to me. Rhino beat Rockstar Spud. No shirt, yet still wearing a bow tie around his neck. Rhino generally destroyed the little guy. He threw him around, just beat the hell out of him. And then Rhino missed a gore attempt. He hit the turnbuckle. This gave Spud some hope. He went outside, he got a trash can, brought it back in, but then he got gored into oblivion and pinned. This was exactly what it needed to be, and there is nobody better in wrestling right now at playing their character than Rockstar Spud. In fact, if TNA were to go under, I would love for WWE to bring in Rockstar Spud and EC3 as a unit. Like they are now. Just bring them in, as is. Which is something I know they don't do, but they should. I don't care what backstory you want to give them. You could say that EC3's aunt was some psychiatric patient from the South. I don't care. You know, I just think they dropped the ball big time on Derek Bateman. It's just funny. Like, Google Derek Bateman NXT. What was the name of the last season of NXT? That never-ending season. NXT Redemption, I think it was. You type in Derek Bateman's name, you get all these pictures of him with that wacky, curly, long hair that he had. And, you know, he wasn't really... Look, I mean, at the time, he wasn't doing anything that made you go, hey, he's going to be a big star. But WWE, being this great judge of talent they seem to think they are, they should have seen something in the guy. Because you look at him back then and you look at him now, it's like night and day. And I'd like to think the guy would get a second chance and you wouldn't just leave him to flounder on the independents if TNA went away. It'd be a crime if guys like him and Spud had nowhere to go, so... to bring the two of them in, if let's say that's the ultimate outcome for TNA, and I think they'll be okay, but I'm just saying if that were to happen, those two together as a package, as a unit, I think would be very entertaining on TV. Lashley beat Samoa Joe with a spear in the main event. Samoa Joe had him in the coquina clutch, had victory seemingly in hand. That was actually the same kind of choke that Lashley won his Bellator fight with. Kenny King ran down. Joe disposed of him quickly, got caught with a full Nelson slam for a 2.5 count. Then came the spear, and finally the pin. This was the first time, I'm pretty sure this was the first time that Lashley needed help. He needed somebody to run down to assist him during one of his matches. Up to this point, he's won all of his matches cleanly, in the middle of the ring. Hopefully not the start of a pattern, and it's just their way of respecting Samoa Joe and his status in the company, that it took somebody else interfering to beat Joe. So another good match, good show overall. I enjoyed it. It was nice to end the week on a positive note. I didn't finish watching Impact until yesterday, but it was nice, you know, because it sure as hell didn't start off that way. Didn't start off on a happy note this week, but it ended on one. Sergeant Chris Melendez will make his Impact Wrestling in-ring debut next week, one day shy of the anniversary of 9/11, so I expect them to play that up quite a bit. I didn't look at the spoiler, so I don't know who he wrestles. Probably one of the bromans would be my guess. And so we have that, and match number two between the Hardys, the Dudleys, and Team 3D, so it should be another good show next Wednesday. Let's move on to the mailbag right now. If you have questions, please email them to me, thesolemonster@gmail.com. You can send MP3 audio questions as well as an attachment. And please include your name and where you are from when you write in. We still have people that don't do that. This audio question comes to us from Joe in Mansfield, Nottingham, England.
After seeing a WWE article recently about random, makeshift, or possible forgettable teams in WWE history, such as High Energy and Low Down, it really got to me thinking, what is your favorite makeshift team?
That's a good question. I think my all-time favorite makeshift team is probably the Mega Powers, Hulk Hogan and Macho Man Randy Savage. They were big when I was a kid. Seeing them go out there on the main event and Saturday night's main event and all that kind of stuff, I was really into it. It's one of the all-time great storylines, really, from start to finish in the history of that company. And you probably will not find a bigger makeshift team in history, in WWE history, than the Mega Powers, so they would be mine. But I would also throw two other names in there. One of them is Kane and X-Pac. I really dug Kane and X-Pac as a tag team, even though X-Pac was insufferable there at the end. Nobody wanted to see him. He had go-away heat, the stuff with when he was with Albert, and just incredible X-Factor. Oh, my God. One of the worst factions of all time. But Kane and X-Pac as a team, they were over. They were fun to watch. I thought, you know, X-Pac being the small guy, Kane being the big monster, they complemented each other well. I love Kane and X-Pac as a team. They're one of my favorite all-time makeshift tag teams in WWE. Probably number two behind the Mega Powers. And I would also throw Jericho on there. Chris Jericho and the Big Show, which wasn't even supposed to happen. It was going to be Chris Jericho and Edge together as a makeshift team. Edge got hurt right away after they won the belts. They were the unified tag team champions. They had the belts from Raw and SmackDown. And then Edge, you know, in a random spot at the beginning of a match at a house show against Jeff Hardy, I think he did like a leapfrog, and came down and ruptured his Achilles, and he was done for. So they had to come up with a backup plan, and the backup plan was for Chris Jericho to recruit the Big Show as his tag team partner. And at first you're like, oh God, the Big Show. I think I have to go back and listen to one of those old sound-offs. I'm almost positive that when I talked about it on the sound-off when it happened, which would have been, oh my God, how many years ago was this now? 2009 maybe? 2010? Whenever it was? Something like that? Actually, it might have been 2009, because I think Edge then came back at the Royal Rumble in 2010, and then they had their WrestleMania match. So this goes back like 5 years. And I think one of the names I suggested as a replacement was, even then, it's funny how things never change, Dolph Ziggler. I think back then that would have been a big way to get Ziggler over to that next level by pairing him off with Jericho, and they would have made a hell of a team. But they went with Big Show, and over time they became an awesome team. And they even had this weird mesh of their entrance music that was kind of cool. Like, they became a great makeshift tag team. So those would be my three. Mega Powers, Kane and X-Pac, and Jericho would be my top three. Ravishing Rob Mace has a question regarding Rock versus Brock, which Rock has publicly admitted was originally going to be the main event at WrestleMania 30. With mumblings of people's discontent with Roman Reigns, maybe another idea could play out. Lesnar destroys Cena at Night of Champions yet again, which realistically leaves nobody else other than Reigns, the heir to the throne, to slay the beast. But instead of waiting until WrestleMania, you have this match at the Royal Rumble. The surprise being that Lesnar goes over, leaving absolutely nobody left to challenge him. The next night on Raw, The Rock returns to save WWE. He could then be, or he could even be, I should say, a massive Royal Rumble surprise and win, then use Raw to explain that he's back to win the title. This gives a decent 3-month build to the match that never happened, and also adds some huge star power to WrestleMania that it gets every year. Rock goes over Lesnar, assuming Brock is leaving, and Rock sticks around for another pay-per-view to drop the belt to Roman Reigns, passing the torch either to Reigns as a babyface, or, as somebody said last week, a newly aligned heel Roman Reigns with Paul Heyman. This turn could happen at the pay-per-view itself, with Heyman helping Reigns to beat Rock for revenge by banishing Lesnar. I don't really see any losers in this scenario. It seems like a win-win situation. What do you think? I am not a fan of the idea of doing Rock and Brock as the big WrestleMania main event. I would rather see Roman Reigns in there with a guy that he's never been in the ring. Brock Lesnar. I would rather see Brock Lesnar in there with a guy he's never been in the ring with, and I would rather build up somebody to face him. I don't care who it is. It could be Roman Reigns. It could be Bray Wyatt. It could be somebody we're not thinking of from NXT who gets called up in the next few months. Whoever it is, I would rather they use that match as an opportunity to get somebody else over to that next level. I'm tired of John Cena and Randy Orton and The Big Show and Triple H and even Chris Jericho to some extent. We need new faces up top. That's why I don't mind Roman Reigns so much. I don't see why people are hating so much on Roman Reigns. Talk to me in 6 months. He's only being inserted into these main event matches now because the hope is that 6 months from now, 9 months from now, he'll be ready. But I don't get like the hate. Why hate on the guy now? It's the same people who complain about John Cena being shoved down our throats. Same old shit. Same old shit. Well, now they're trying to give you somebody new, and they complain about that. Just because we all think we know what's going to happen, it's so predictable. Obviously, they're going to do Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania. Sometimes predictable is okay. Just because something is predictable doesn't mean that you shouldn't do it. If it makes sense and you build to it, it's fine. I don't see what the problem is here. If that's our WrestleMania main event next year, that's okay with me. It's a fresh match we've never seen before. They put a newer guy over. Finally, he slays the beast. He's got the belt. And now you've got Roman Reigns set up for a whole bunch of different feuds, whether it's against Seth Rollins, or if it's against, if Batista comes back, or you want to do, you know, Dean Ambrose even if he goes heel eventually, or you have Roman Reigns in there. If you do Roman Reigns and John Cena, with Roman Reigns beating John Cena and kind of putting the exclamation point on it that your time is over, and this is my time now. This is the Roman Reigns era. You know, whatever they do. But I would rather they go in that direction. Rock and Brock, to me, especially with Rock winning the belt, you know, been there, done that, man. We don't need that. We don't need Rock to come back just to put somebody over. Let the current guys put somebody over. Let Brock Lesnar, who's the big guy that's currently on the roster and already has the belt, he's the big outside star they brought back, and they put the belt on him like they did with Rock already. Let him be the one to put somebody over and drop the belt. Why bring back Rock to do that? Christian from Las Vegas. My question relates to the idea of having somebody as the face of the WWE. I understand that whoever draws the most money usually represents the company, and WWE loves to focus on the casual audience rather than the dedicated fans. Most casual fans are attracted to the face of the company at the time, like Hulk Hogan, John Cena, and it looks like soon to be Roman Reigns, when they have limited ability and seem to do the same thing over and over. I don't know if it's my ignorance as a wrestling fan, but I'd much rather see a Ricky Steamboat than a Hulk Hogan, an Edge over a John Cena, or a Daniel Bryan over a Roman Reigns. Why are casual fans into these guys who don't have the same amount of ability as others in the company? Well, there's a lot of flaws in that, in what you just said there. WWE has the ability to push whoever the hell they want. And if they put the machine behind that guy, I can't say that guy will always get over, but 9 times out of 10, they will. It worked with Hogan. It worked with Brett. He was kind of the face of that new generation. Then Shawn Michaels got the big push. Steve Austin, The Rock, Triple H. They wanted to make Triple H a main event star, and they did. Okay, you can go through countless examples over the years. And even more recently, you know, Edge became a star. CM Punk finally got the company behind him and became an even bigger star. So whoever they pick to be the next guy, more often than not, it's going to work. Because they're putting everything behind him. They're going to protect him. They're not going to beat him and beat him and beat him the way they do almost everybody else on the roster, from Ziggler to Cesaro, and even now Bray Wyatt to some extent. I saw some house show results the other day. It was the Wyatt family in a 6-man tag against the Great Khali and the Usos. And the Great Khali and the Usos beat the Wyatt family. Why? Why? At least it was a house show. Hopefully we never see that match on TV, at least not with that outcome. So, they already beat everybody else, but normally if you're going to be the guy, they'll protect you. And yeah, we are seeing that now with Roman Reigns, and that's fine. I'm okay with that. You know, we need some guys who are booked to look strong and to win and not be losers all the time. So, but this idea that why is the casual audience only behind guys that don't have the ability? The casual audience will get behind some of these other guys if the company wants them to. It's all in the way in which they're presented. I don't think that, you know, mainstream America can't get behind a guy like Daniel Bryan because of how he looks. They can get behind Daniel Bryan. But the company never really pushed him as the top star. CM Punk. Company, you know, never really built him up as their top guy. He was always second fiddle to John Cena. And that may just have more to do with bad timing, because Cena was still doing his thing. It wasn't like Cena was ready to retire or anything. If John Cena got, you know, God forbid, got killed in a car crash or something, and CM Punk was on top as the champion, and now they're like, holy shit, what are we going to do? Maybe then they'd be forced to put everything behind CM Punk and build the whole company behind him. But he was always playing second fiddle to John Cena. So it was just, he was a victim of bad timing more than anything else. You could say that about Randy Savage back in the day. If Hulk Hogan wasn't around, Randy Savage probably would have been the number one guy, but he was always playing second fiddle to Hulk Hogan, even when Savage had the belt. That was the whole storyline, right? When Savage finally turned heel, You guys got me in the back seat, you and Elizabeth, right? I'm always number three. I should be number one. So they turned it into a storyline, but in real life, that's kind of how it was. I don't know that anybody ever looked at Randy Savage as the face of WWE. It was always Hulk Hogan, Hulkamania, say your prayers, brother. So guys come along who are very talented, and sometimes there's somebody bigger. Austin and Rock. Some people would say they were on the same level. I disagree. I think when they were at their peak, doing their thing during the Attitude Era, there's no doubt at all whatsoever who the number one guy was. It was not Rock. It was not Foley, Undertaker, nobody. It was Steve Austin. And if Steve Austin wasn't around, then it would have been Rock. So it's not that they can't get behind those guys. It's because the company doesn't want them to get behind those guys, because the company doesn't see Ricky Steamboat or Edge or Daniel Bryan as numero uno. They're second fiddle, third string. That's how they look at those guys. Now, the other aspect to this, you're talking about the difference here between casual fans and hardcore, diehard, I'm going to watch no matter what pro wrestling fans. Because there isn't a casual fan in the world who's watching Raw over the last 2 weeks and saying to themselves, I'm going to watch Raw again this week. Fuck football. I'm going to watch Raw. There isn't a casual fan in the world who is going to stick with the product if they watch shows like the shows they've given us over the last 2 weeks. You and I, you know, we're going to stick with it. Some of you won't. I know some of you don't watch anymore, but a lot of you guys are going to watch. I'm going to watch, and I'll be there live tweeting and reviewing as I always do. Casual fans won't. That's what makes them casual fans. That's why wrestling became so popular in the late 90s. It became cool, and the audience swelled with all these casual fans who were into Stone Cold beating up his boss and The Rock and DX and Val Venus and everything else. And as soon as wrestling wasn't cool anymore, they went away. And WWE has spent the last decade plus desperately trying to get those people back, and they don't get it. They're not coming back because there's no reason for them to come back. You haven't given them a reason to come back. Why would any casual fan come back and watch this every single week? What is there about the current product that is so fun and cool and hip and appealing to a casual fan? There is nothing. There is nothing appealing to those people. So they don't watch. But a casual fan doesn't give a shit how good of a wrestler you are. A casual fan doesn't give a shit that Daniel Bryan is a better wrestler than John Cena. A casual wrestling fan does not give a crap that Kenta is making his debut this week on NXT. They don't care because they're not into the moves and they're not into all that stuff. That's what makes them casual. They probably don't know a lot about that stuff. They don't know a lot about the history of wrestling and, you know, the difference between, you know, a five-star match and a three-star match. They don't care. They don't give a shit. It's a completely different audience. So if you're WWE, it's not so much Daniel Bryan's a better worker than Roman Reigns, so therefore he should be the face of the company. No, it's that Daniel Bryan is small, and he looks like a goat-faced troll, and he only got over because the hardcore fans wouldn't shut up, so we threw him a bone, and he won at WrestleMania, and he got his big moment, and he had his time, and that's that. Roman Reigns, this guy looks statuesque. He's got the long hair. He's got a great tan. He's got the tribal tattoo. He looks like a badass. He looks like a movie star. You know, this guy, we can build everything around this guy. This guy's got Hollywood potential down the road. This guy can go out and do Good Morning America and all these different shows and represent our company. CM Punk, this guy's got tattoos all over his body. He's got tattoos on his lip. He's got tattoos on his knuckles. He's kind of a prick. We can't make this guy the head of our company. It'll be more of a headache than anything else. So he's a better wrestler than Roman Reigns. So what? And that's how they look at these things. I mean, I'll be the first to admit, if I was running my own wrestling company, mainstream national wrestling company, looking to build my audience and to get publicity, whatever, and you handed me Daniel Bryan and you handed me a guy that looked like Roman Reigns, I would have to think twice about who I wanted to build my company around. I mean, Daniel Bryan, sure, he'd be a big star, but I'd look at a guy like Roman Reigns and feel the same way they do. This guy right here, this is the guy that I want to build my company around. Because he's got a certain look. And in the ring, yeah, maybe he's not the same kind of wrestler that Daniel Bryan is, but he'll get better. We could teach him. We just put him in the ring with Daniel Bryan for a few months. He'll get better. It'll be fine. Hulk Hogan's one of the biggest stars in the history of wrestling, and his big move was a fucking leg drop. What don't people understand about this? Brian from Clarksville, Tennessee. Why can't titles change hands on a countout? Normally, when countouts happen, the opponent is unable to make it to their feet in time to get back in the ring, which basically means they are unable to compete. I understand not changing on a disqualification, but countouts make no sense. I think you're absolutely right. I think Brian's right on the money. The only answer I have for you is because that's how it's always been done, which is not a very good answer at all. You are essentially giving up the match, right? You are unable to continue. If you're in the ring and you're unable to continue, you lose via submission. So, you know, even if you walk out on purpose to get yourself counted out, you're giving up the match, are you not? It's like a forfeit. So I think titles should change hands on a countout. That way we would dramatically cut down on countouts by over 90%. But, you see, it takes away another lazy finish for them to fall back on, so they'll never do it. Jamie from Wisconsin also has two questions. The first is regarding an effective way to promote the WWE Network. Would it be wise for WWE to acknowledge their history from the Ruthless Aggression era, as opposed to ignoring it? You've brought up the Brock Undertaker Hell in a Cell match from No Mercy, which is also a personal favorite of mine. When Heyman's dropping his weekly promos, why not talk up how Brock also conquered the Phenom back in the day? And especially since he's locked in a feud with John Cena, bring up how you can see Brock beat Cena a decade earlier for only $9.99. The biggest selling point for the network for me is the old pay-per-views, and to ignore promoting them and promote the $9.99 price point instead is foolish to me. I agree. I think it's foolish to ignore that part of history. They did that when Undertaker and Triple H had their WrestleMania matches. They never acknowledged their first Mania match from 2001, and I thought it was stupid. The reason I'm guessing is because Vince McMahon supposedly is not a fan of the American Badass slash Big Evil version, the non-dead version, the human version, so to speak, of The Undertaker, so they try to ignore it. And that character was prevalent during that period, right? It was Biker Taker against Brock Lesnar in 2002, so maybe there's something to it. Maybe Vince just doesn't like that version of The Undertaker character, and you know, he went back to being the dead man. It's been a decade. He just wants people to try to forget about it. But, you know, it's there, right? Your selling point for the network, one of the selling points is how you have over 300 pay-per-views. It's not hard for people to go back and see those old Undertaker matches. What it is they only embrace history when it suits their needs. When it's convenient for them to do so, they will acknowledge their history. Most of the time, they will ignore it and pretend it doesn't exist, like it's from some alternate universe. You know, for the network, they kind of have to acknowledge history just because they want you to pay the $9.99, but yet they still choose to ignore certain events. Why not drive the narrative that John Cena can't beat Brock Lesnar, you know, drive it even more by airing their Backlash match from 2003 one week after Raw goes off the air? Hey, when Raw goes off the air, switch over to the WWE Network because we're going to air the very first Brock Lesnar versus John Cena match, the match that you may have never seen before, you know? And oh, by the way, you can also see a classic match between Goldberg and The Rock on that same pay-per-view. Their one and only match. They need to do a better job with that, I would agree. Jamie's other question, who are the worst actors and actresses in WWE? The Bella Twins. Nikki is better than Brie, but they're both terrible. And like Lance Storm tweeted on Monday night, I hope Dean Ambrose turns out to be a horrible actor so he never again is asked to do another movie and doesn't have to take time off from Raw. Because, boy, we could have used him on that show the last 2 weeks. Julian in Brooklyn, if Kaz and Enzo were called to the main roster, would you be disappointed if Enzo became more of a manager to Big Kaz and rarely wrestled at all? I'm thinking Ricardo and Del Rio here. I feel like this is the most likely scenario for those two. That's kind of how I see it unfolding when they eventually make it up. I think Enzo will wrestle, but he'll wrestle about as often as Ricardo probably did, maybe a little bit more. I think the emphasis will be on Kaz because he's bigger. And the real strong point of Enzo Amore is his mouth. I mean, the guy is entertaining as all hell. He's awesome on the microphone and cutting promos and stuff. I think he'd make a great manager. And I think ultimately that's probably the role for him. He's not going to do much as a wrestler. You know, he's just not going to ever get above a certain level. I don't see that ever happening. His selling point is his mouth. And I definitely don't want to split the two of them up. So if they think they've got something in Colin Cassidy, who's, you know, getting better. He's not great, but he's getting better, you know, each passing week. And even his personality, you know, I remember when I first saw these two, Enzo was great even then. Kaz was just kind of there. He looked a little awkward. He sounded awkward. He's finding his voice now. He's kind of made a personality for himself. I think Enzo breaking his leg and being gone for so long kind of forced him to find his own personality. And so now he's, you know, he's almost as entertaining as Enzo is. But I think when they get brought up, I would bring them up together as a team, I think, and let them work as a tag team just because they need new teams. They need tag teams so badly. So bring them up as a team, but I think in the long run, we probably end up with Enzo as his mouthpiece and Kaz being the one to go on and have a singles career. And I'm okay with that. Mr. Logic from Houston, Texas. A big item on Diva Dirt this past week was about who should be the next diva entered into the WWE Hall of Fame. There were two recurring arguments made by a lot of people. Number one, Mildred Burke should be in next, which is a good call in my book. The other argument is that China will likely not go in simply because she acted in adult films, which sounds like BS in my book. Is there credence that her work in porn is something that could keep her out of the Hall of Fame? Do you think China should even go into the Hall of Fame? What other divas do you see being inducted in the near future? To go back to your Mildred Burke point, Mildred Burke was a big name in women's wrestling. I think she retired in the 1950s, so that tells you how far back she goes. She hasn't exactly, you know, been a recent name that people would know, and I think she passed away in the late 80s. There's no way I don't think Mildred Burke goes into the WWE Hall of Fame unless it's done very quietly at some point in the future. And if for no other reason, number one, she's a name nobody would know. And as we know, because Jerry Lawler wanted Lance Russell to induct him into the Hall of Fame, and that's when he got the classic answer from Kevin Dunn, well, nobody knows who Lance Russell is, so we'll go with William Shatner instead. Fuck you, Kevin Dunn. But anyway, but people don't know Mildred Burke, but also they don't have any footage of her. And it's hard to put somebody in the Hall of Fame when you can't even put a video package together to show people who this woman is. So I think that, coupled with the fact that her name just goes back so far in the past, and there obviously is no affiliation at all to WWE, I don't see her going in. Not to say she doesn't deserve it, but she's not going in. China. Do I think China is going to go in? Do I think she deserves to go in? I do. I think China probably deserves to go in as part of a package induction for DX. If they're ever going to induct DX as a group, which I think they probably will, they'll probably induct the NWO at some point, then I think she should go in as her, Triple H, and Shawn should go in. And I guess if you want to throw the Outlaws in there, you can do that too. But that's how I would see her going in. I say, why not? I mean, look, you know, say what you want to about China. She certainly left a mark. She did things that no other diva before her had ever done. She wrestled the men. She was an intercontinental champion, which I thought was a disgrace, but they did it. She did something nobody else has done since and probably never will again. And back in the day when China first came in those first few years before the very end there, I mean, she was a force to be reckoned with on that TV show. And she was over, and she was a badass woman who, whether you were male or female, would go and just kick your ass. So China was a big part of that whole Attitude Era period that everybody loves to romanticize about. Yeah, I think she probably does deserve a spot in the Hall of Fame. And I don't think, here's the thing, I don't think her past in porn would prevent her from going in. What will prevent her from going in is the fact that I think she's still involved in porn or like escorts or I don't know what she's doing in her day-to-day life, but I think she's still part of that world. As long as she's part of that world and still doing adult stuff, she's not going in. She would have to get away from that, retire, whatever the word is, and be a few years removed from all that and stay out of trouble and kind of keep her nose clean, and then I think she would go in. As long as she's still involved in the adult world in some way, shape, or form, she ain't going in. It's just not going to happen. As far as what divas I see being inducted in the near future, I thought about this. I came up with three names that I could easily see going in. The first one is Sable. And I say that because Sable, of course, is married to Brock Lesnar. So she's on at least amicable terms with the company. She has to be. And she also made a mark. Now, she may not have been very well liked by people. There's a lot of stories about her acting like a diva behind the scenes and being difficult to work with, and Sean Waltman taking a dump in her bag one day, which is just lovely, just a lovely visual. But she was a former women's champion. She was one of the big stars of the Attitude Era. She was on the cover of Playboy, which sold, I think, like a record number of copies for Playboy at the time. She was a draw. Sable was a draw. You know, when Mark Merrill went down with that knee injury and his wife was on TV more than he was and got over as a star, he came back and, I mean, there was no way. I mean, she just completely dwarfed him in terms of star power. And from there, she only got bigger and bigger. And her chest got bigger and bigger. So Sable going in, given the Brock Lesnar connection, I could see that. I could see them honoring her with an induction. Mickey James is another one. She's no longer affiliated with TNA. I guess she's married. She's not married, but she's with Magnus, I think, and they're having a kid. I don't think that would have any real impact on things. I know they brought Mickey James in to do some work one week many, many, many months ago with the Divas down in at the Performance Center. And there was some talk that she was going to debut on Raw, and she never did. So obviously she's on good terms with the company. As long as she's completely gone from TNA and isn't really affiliated with any other wrestling organization, I think there's always a good chance that she goes in. She was one of their more memorable performers, and she's a great wrestler. She would deserve it. And Victoria is another one, the former Tara from TNA. Also, she's gone from the company. She's doing her own thing, running her own business, I think, in Chicago. She was just visiting recently, I think, backstage at a Raw show. She's very friendly with the people who work there. And, we have, you know, people have a lot of respect for her. She's a great wrestler. And she held the women's title a bunch of times and had success. So Sable, Mickey James, and Victoria, not necessarily in that order. I think those are three names that probably are on their way into the Hall of Fame next, as far as the women go. Pat writes in, I've been listening to a lot of Shoot interviews lately, and many wrestlers cite Shawn Michaels as their inspiration to get into pro wrestling. My question is, what wrestler or wrestlers do you see on the roster now that will have the same impact on future generations of wrestling? That's a really good question. I don't think there's anybody the caliber of Shawn Michaels out there. In fact, there isn't. But I think, you know, from the most recent generation or the current generation, I think CM Punk and Daniel Bryan come to mind, just because those two guys got over in spite of all the shit they had to go through, and the fact they're too small, they're indie darlings, and both guys had to eat a lot of shit on their way up to WWE. And in spite of all that stuff, they became big stars, they became world champions, and Bryan headlined WrestleMania this year. I mean, who the hell would have thought that would have ever happened, especially this quickly? So they broke down a lot of barriers, and I think even now you're seeing guys who are getting a chance in developmental who probably wouldn't have gotten a second look before by people like Triple H, because they saw how successful Punk got and how successful Bryan got and how over he was. I think the two of them broke down a lot of barriers that are now allowing other indie performers, because WWE was not pulling a lot of talent off the indies. All of a sudden, they've got guys like Neville under contract, Sami Zayn, Kevin Steen, Kenta, Devitt. I don't think that would have happened were it not for Punk and Bryan having the success that they did. And I think there's probably a lot of guys, maybe who were small, who watch wrestling now, who may think they wouldn't have a shot, who are going to watch and say, hey, all these other small guys are getting a shot. And Punk was successful, and Bryan was successful, and I can do that. And they'll follow in their footsteps and start training and try to get into wrestling. So that's the closest comparison I can make to what Shawn Michaels was, I guess, back in the day to a lot of current guys. I think Punk and Bryan are two names that come to mind who will probably have that same effect on the future generation. Sam from Townsville, Australia, who do you think was a better superstar-manager combo, Undertaker and Paul Bearer or Brock Lesnar and Paul Heyman? Ah, that's a tough one. That is a tough question. I would have to I love them both as combos. I just think they're perfect. It's like peanut butter and jelly. And you know my thoughts on Brock Lesnar and Paul Heyman. I think Lesnar and Heyman are, with all due respect to Gorilla Monsoon and Bobby Heenan, it's two different things because they were announcers. These guys are performers in the ring every week. Lesnar and Heyman are like the best combo, the best duo in the history of WWE. That's how great those two are together. and they could be great on their own, but not as great as they are together. Undertaker and Paul Bearer, I don't know that you could have done one without the other. Paul Bearer as a character would not have worked without The Undertaker, and I don't think The Undertaker would have been as successful without Paul Bearer. Because, and here's why, not just because the characters went so well together, but because The Undertaker very rarely spoke. The early incarnation of The Undertaker didn't say hardly a word other than, rest in peace. And, I mean, he'd say a few things here and there, but he did not do a lot of the talking. Paul Bearer did a lot of the talking, most of the talking for The Undertaker. And that whole act with the urn, the power of the urn and everything else, I have to go with Undertaker and Paul Bearer. I think as a combo, they were better because I think without each other, it wouldn't have worked, or wouldn't have worked as well. Lesnar and Heyman, as awesome as they are together, they could be very successful on their own. Paul Heyman, believe me, if Brock Lesnar decides not to re-sign, he goes away. I hope Paul Heyman doesn't go away with him, and they find other stuff for him to do, other people for him to manage, you know, the Heyman guys, Heyman girl, whatever it may be. I think Heyman will be just fine. I don't know that I could say the same about Undertaker and Paul Bearer back in the day. They just went so well together. So for that reason, I will go with Undertaker and Paul Bearer, but man, that's a hard question. John from California, he's got two questions. Do you have a favorite championship match that you believe is underrated to this day? I don't know if you could call it underrated because WWE, I know they've had it on one of their at least one of their DVDs, but I think there's a ton of fans who probably don't even know this match exists, and that's a shame. That's the Bret Hart 1-2-3 Kid WWE championship match on Raw back in July of 1994. It was such a great match, great drama. It told a great story, clean finish. In the end, Bret shows respect to the Kid and you know, puts him over like one of his toughest opponents. It was just so great. I still don't think that match gets enough love. His second question, since your birthday is a month away, where would you rather spend your birthday? At Bound for Glory in Japan or in the live audience for Talking Dead after the Season 5 premiere of The Walking Dead? Bound for Glory, for sure. But it's less to do with TNA and more to do with me wanting to visit Japan. I really, one day, it's on my bucket list. I would love to be able to go to Japan for a wrestling show. I mean, I've heard Japan in general, it's, you know, beautiful and there's a lot of sights to see and stuff like that. But to go, I don't care if it's the Tokyo Dome with 30,000 people or Korakuen Hall or one of these small places that fits 2,500 like the one TNA is going to. Just to go to Japan and to go to a wrestling show. I would love to go to a New Japan wrestling show. You know, to go to a New Japan show like at the Tokyo Dome would be phenomenal. But that's one of the things I've always wanted to do, and I hope one day I'm able to. So if you're giving me the choice, if you're saying, hey, you can have a free trip to Japan for Bound for Glory, or you can go to the Talking Dead. I love Walking Dead, but I'm taking Japan. And finally, this week's sad tweet comes to us courtesy of at CeeLo Green, the musician / ex-judge from that reality show, The Voice. Let's give a little backstory here to the insanely stupid tweets that this moron posted a week ago. Posted these tweets last Sunday. So, a couple of years ago, he's out on a date with this woman, and the woman claims that she was drugged. And I guess the lawyers say that what happened was they were out dining, they were on a date, and any sex that they had, this is what his lawyers say, any sex they had was consensual. She alleges that dude spiked her drink with ecstasy, and the next thing she knew, she woke up naked in her hotel room with him. So he just pleaded no contest to this, to the charges against him. And then on Sunday, he posts this stream of tweets where he compares rape to a home invasion. And the implication being that women can only be rape victims. They can only claim to be victims of a rape if they are conscious. So he posts this first tweet. He says, when someone breaks on a home, and by the way, he spells breaks B-R-A-K-E-S like a fucking car. What a genius this guy is. When someone breaks on a home, there is broken glass. Where is your plausible proof anyone was raped? So then he shoves the foot further into his mouth. He says, women who have really been raped, remember. And he puts that in all caps. And then he says, If someone is passed out, they're not even with you consciously. So with implies consent. Yes, says the rapist. TBS announced this week they were canceling his reality show, The Good Life, after one season. They didn't give a reason, but it did shit ratings. I'm sure this just gave them one more reason to drop the axe. So now he'll have more time to go perfect his pickup line. What's the old pickup line? Yeah, does this rag smell like chloroform to you? Yeah, I could see CeeLo Green going around, hitting up the bar scene, using that as a pickup line. I can't think of anything more sad if this guy actually believes what he wrote. Of course, he deleted his Twitter, and then he reactivated his Twitter, and he said, you know, I apologize if anybody took my comments out of context. It was one of those bullshit apologies. This guy's an idiot. You wonder sometimes with these celebrities what goes through their minds. You just pleaded no contest to accusations that you drugged and raped somebody, and then you go on Twitter and you post comments like that. CeeLo Green, your dumb shit of the week. If you have questions for the Sound Off, unless you're CeeLo Green, don't bother writing in. But if you're not, email me, thesolomonster@gmail.com is the place to email your questions. I do read everything I get, even if I can't get to it right away. And you could also follow me on Twitter. @Solomonster is my handle. I live tweet during Raw. And God, please, please join me when I live tweet during Raw. I need the entertainment, especially the last 2 weeks. @Solomonster. I'm on Facebook as well. Facebook.com/TheSolomonster is my profile page. And we have an official closed discussion group. Solomonster Sounds Off. What an original title. If you want to apply for membership, we've got over 2,600 members in our group. A lot of great discussion going on there, so please consider joining us there. Don't forget to subscribe on YouTube. YouTube.com/TheSolomonster is our official channel. Check out that Sound Off inbox if you missed it last week. And also support the podcast in any way that you can. You can make a PayPal donation on TheSolomonster.com. You can sign up for a free 30-day trial of the Audible.com service, which is an audiobook service. You get one free audiobook as part of your trial. I love the hell out of you guys that have been spreading word to family and friends. There's been a nice little spike recently, so let's see if we can keep that up. Audibletrial.com/Solomonster is our custom URL, so that's the one to use if you want to sign up for free and give it a shot. And check out our brand new store, ProWrestlingTees.com/Solomonster Sounds Off. Proud to be part of the Pro Wrestling Tees family now, along with a lot of great wrestling legends. I almost don't feel worthy of being there, but we are. And very important that you guys, if you're going to buy a shirt, now would be the time to do it, because the more shirts we sell up front, the more designs that we can offer going forward. So ProWrestlingTees.com/Solomonster Sounds Off is the URL for the store. First 25 people who buy a shirt will get a shout out right here on a future podcast. You can listen to the show in iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio. You can leave us reviews in iTunes and Stitcher. Thank you to everybody who has done so. Any way that you support the podcast, you have my most sincere appreciation. We'll be back next weekend for episode 345. I sincerely hope I have a much happier Raw review next week for what they're billing as the season premiere, although Jerry Springer is on the show with the Bella Twins, so I have my doubts. What a show that's going to be. But until next time, be well, stay safe, go buy a shirt, and we'll see you right back here next week for more Sound Off. Take care, guys.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Solomonster Sounds Off.
Jonathan writes in, Sheamus and Dean Ambrose don't defend their U.S. title for weeks and how the titles mean shit. Let me school you, son. There's a big difference now, today, between the world title and the secondary titles. WWE has done a horrendous job. So they lose and they lose and they lose, and soon enough, people look at them as losers who happen to carry around a belt. That's not how you make your title seem important. Your champion should look strong. So now that I shot down your argument there, if Brock comes back and defends the title at Survivor Series, and then again at the Rumble, and again at Mania, the world will not end. Business will not die. But I guarantee you, those Brock Lesnar title defenses are going to be must-see TV when they happen. So, eat your sour grapes and just relax.
The Solomonster Sounds Off.
Since 2007, on thesolomonster.com, Stitcher Radio, and iTunes.
Solomonster Sound Off.